you, people. This is Starship, Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis off for another day.
Yes.
On broadcast insulin.
NAFTA may be dead or dying, but NAFHA is alive, the North American Free Hugging Agreement, as the Peña Nieto said he wanted to give him a great big hug.
I look forward to a hug from you.
Yes, he did. He said that.
Please do not let our belt buckles touch.
He doesn't seem like a big hugger.
No.
No. Mm-mm. No, no.
Not a big hug guy.
No. No, that is my guess. Is that the president's not a hugger? He's a pull you in guy,
right?
Yeah,
but he's not. And then he does the thing where he pulls you in, and then your arms are kind of interlocked, almost like Game of Thrones style, you know. And they do that thing where they're not really shaking hands; you're shaking forearms. He does
especially with the ladies. He does that too. He pulls you in a little too close.
But he's a kisser, though. If you notice that with the women. He likes to go in for the kiss, and, you know, if their lips are in the way, it's one thing. If they're, you know men like this,
yeah.
Especially older guys.
And you get prepared for it after you identify who those people are in
right.
a room.
You got to always know, and the best trick I have watched.
What is it?
Women display with this, because there's guys of a certain age, they all do it. They're all trying to get, you know, a little lip action.
Straighten right? out the elbow, or what do you
no,
do?
No, they come in, and you kind of give them, like, they start aiming the docking position at your lips, and then at the last minute you turn. I mean, the very last minute you turn.
Give them an ear?
Yeah, and you give them an ear. Yeah.
You get wet ear.
Or jawbone. You try to make sure, you try to angle it exactly right, so it just kind of hits just east of the jawbone.
Like Charlie Brown in the football, just pull it away at the last second.
Yeah, just last second. Because you see him do this, like, he did that to that Macron woman all the time.
Red
you
cheeks.
Really are a much hotter babe than I thought.
He was all over.
She started to get that PO'd look on her face.
Yeah,
like don't.
Yeah. Well, you kind of wonder now with the Canadian situation, such that it is, if in fact they're going to have to send Trudeau's wife down here to try to work the deal with Trump. I don't know what's going to happen. We're going to
unbelievable.
Talk to former ambassador to Canada from the United States to explain what this actually means. So the president did announce earlier this afternoon,
mm-hmm.
late this morning, early this afternoon, that the United States has cut a deal with Mexico. They haven't signed it yet.
Right.
And it has to be ratified by Congress. I don't know if the president knows this.
It's a little detail.
Yeah. So this is not like, you know, we're done. We're, you know, we're good. I did it. We're good. We're fine. I mean, there will be details that have to come out because there's a you know, kind of thin details. And you heard the president. It was they put the president on a speakerphone.
It's the most painfully awkward speakerphone conversation.
Ever. And I've had some awkward speakerphone conversations that I never felt like I did with this. Because they were using an interpreter.
Mm-hmm.
But. The problem was that as they were going through the interpreter, the president was just like bored and the camera was on him. So you're watching a guy listen to 5 minutes of a conversation he's not interested in. And by the time we were done with it, I was surprised that Mexico had not invaded the United States.
Could have gone very wrong. It just was painfully awkward. At the end, they wanted to hug each other, so I think it ended nicely.
Well, I look forward to having the hug with you when you come down.
And, you know, Peña Nieto is leaving. The president's gone. There's a new president, president-elect, who's like, you know, that's not... Trump says he's gotten along great with him. Although, now North Korea says that the United States is going to invade them, and they're preparing for an invasion. So that little piece of information just sort of slid under the radar today, that the North Korean thing's not going as well. But we got this. So we'll find out what happens with Canada. Are we going to go to war with Canada?
Oh,
should we just do that instead? Would that be easier?
I'd vote against that.
All right. We'll find out. We're going to be joined by Dick Durbin here in just a few minutes. Remembering Senator McCain. Also this hour, Ken Burns will join us. The great documentarian, the greatest, arguably the greatest documentarian in film history. We'll be here to talk about what John McCain meant to America. That is coming your way. But first... Ryan, what's at the bottom of the hour?
Governor Bruce Rauner signs a new fertility preservation law. We'll explain what it is coming up at the WGN Radio Newsroom at 3:30.
And Violetta's got the WGN Trouble Spots brought to you by the Illinois Department of Transportation. Senator Dick Durbin joins us right now on the hotline, and we want to welcome him in as we remember John McCain throughout the afternoon here. Coming up, Ken Burns is going to join us in just a few minutes, talk about his place in history. And Senator, let's start with you worked with him for many, you know, you were across the aisle from him for many, many, many years. And despite the fact that you were on different sides of the political battle here. I'm hearing this from so many Democrats today. He was just a very, very combatant, but you know, at the end of the day, he realized that this is America.
He really did, and it was interesting. We started together. We were elected to the U.S. House of Representatives the same year, 1982. I came into the chamber in 1983, brand new congressman from central Illinois, and there stood this American hero, John McCain. Everybody knew the John McCain story. 5.5 years in a prisoner of war camp, came back battered and bruised and tortured, and now here was his first elected office. And I worked up the courage to go up and introduce myself. I, Dick Durbin from Springfield, Illinois. Yeah. I said, can I ask you a favor? He said, what's that? I said, would you do a cable TV show back to my district with me? And he said, sure. And he did. And I was speechless. I thought he was going to laugh in my face, this new Republican conservative saying yes to this fellow he'd never heard of from Springfield, Illinois. So it may be lost to history, but it was a taped show that started a friendship which endured for more than 3 decades.
I want to read, this is just coming into us right now, I want to read a statement from the president.
Oh.
That has just been released. He said, despite our differences on policy and politics, I respect Senator McCain's service to our country and, in his honor, have signed a proclamation to fly the flag of the United States at half-staff until the day of his internment. He is asking Mike Pence to address the ceremony that's going to be at the Capitol on Friday, and he is sending John Kelly, James Mattis, and John Bolton to the funeral.
Certainly a stronger stance than he has taken over the weekend or ever before on this issue.
But let's be very candid about the awkward nature of this. The family made it clear they don't want the president at this ceremony. I mean, he is making the best of a bad situation. But remember what this president said about John McCain and virtually about all prisoners of war. It was a horrible, hateful statement. And John McCain, stiff upper lip, just took it and said, life will go on. And it's a reason why they have a split company on so many major issues in just a year and a half. John McCain's statement after the Helsinki meeting, where President Trump was meeting with Vladimir Putin, was, I thought, the clearest break with a president by a member of his party I had ever seen. He just rejected what President Trump is trying to do with Vladimir Putin and did it in the strongest possible terms. And you wonder, well, why would John McCain feel that strongly, that personally? I went with him. He invited me once. He used to have these crazy codels. He would leave Thursday night. We'd come back Monday morning, barely dragging ourselves into the Capitol. It was like a Bataan death march when you took a trip with John McCain. There wasn't a spare moment for a cup of coffee, let alone to pick up a souvenir. And we'd go from country to country. On this trip, we went to Ukraine. And as he walked the streets of Kyiv, and I was with him, he walked the streets. People would come up to John and recognize him right off the bat and realize he'd been there during the Maidan Square revolution. And they identified with him, standing up and fighting on their side when they were pushing back against Russia. So for John, this just wasn't a political pose. He really, really felt the president made a serious mistake in Helsinki, and he didn't spare any words in saying it.
You think there's political pressure and that the president is now bowing to that when he makes that statement that just came in after flying the flag half-staff yesterday? It just went back up less than an hour ago after being, you know,
raised again.
And then, you know, you heard the American Legion come out, the largest veterans organization, say that Trump needs to make an appropriate proclamation about Senator McCain. Do you think he finally was hearing all this? I know that we've heard there was a lot of wrangling going on at the White House over this and that he wasn't handling it appropriately. Do you think he finally bowed to that?
Listen, the word sorry is not in this president's vocabulary. He never, ever says he's sorry, even when he makes mistakes. All of us make mistakes. I've said sorry plenty of times and was you know, acknowledging the obvious. This president can't bring himself to do that. And that I think, is one of the real deep flaws in his character. And when it came to John McCain, he made a colossal mistake to diminish this man's service to the country and say, my heroes never got captured. I mean, and reflected, of course, on all the prisoners of war who have served this country and suffered because of their service. And it's understandable the veterans groups and so many others would come out and say this. Give this man respect at least at this moment. So, yes, I'm glad he's saying something. And, I believe in redemption, and I want everyone to have a chance, a second chance. And maybe this is the best that Donald Trump can do in making up for some pretty serious mistakes.
Yeah, well, at least he's doing this. I think that's the, as an American and as somebody who believes in patriotism, I think this is the right thing for the president to do. Yeah. He came to it late, but he came to it, so we'll give him that.
Yes.
But I want to ask you this very quickly before, just within the last hour or two, the McCain family put out basically the last words of John McCain, and it was a bit of a speech, and some of it's excised from things he said before. But he said, you know, despite, and I'm paraphrasing here, but despite the troubled times that we live in now, nothing is forever in America, and this moment shall pass, and it will be okay, because the enduring core of America will remain strong. Do you believe that to be the case?
I do. I have to. I'm an optimist by nature, and I believe in the people of this country. We have our differences. 30-40% are loyal to this president. I am doing my best to work with him, but I don't share that loyalty. And yet, we're all Americans, even with our political differences. And John said that over and over again during the course of his career. And the second thing I believe in, and he did too, is this Constitution. I really believe it has seen us through some terrible things, civil wars and Great Depressions, terrorist attacks, and everything that's occurred in our history. And John was committed to that, committed enough to risk his life to sign up for the United States Navy and to fly those fighter planes. I mean, yes, he believes in the enduring greatness of America, only great when the men and women who are honored to serve this country in public office step up and find solutions to the challenges we face.
All right, we'll leave it there, Senator. Thank you very much for
your time.
Thank you,
Senator.
Appreciate it.
You bet. Good to be with you.
Senator Dick Durbin on the life of Senator John McCain. And speaking on behalf of, I think, a lot of fans of Ken Burns, I can say that there are very few voices in America that have as great an historical perspective on having made so many great documentaries about the history of the United States. And the Vietnam War one, which came out a couple of years ago, is the latest in those great historical ones. And John McCain played a major role in those documentaries made by Ken Burns. And Ken Burns will join us on the other side of the news to talk about that. Right now, Ryan Burrow's got the news, brought to you by It's Just Lunch.
As far as I know, you are the only Republican who thought it was a good thing to make this report public.
Well, frankly, I also had some mixed emotions about it. But the reason why I think came down and said that we should is because that's what America is all about. We do things wrong. We make mistakes. We review those. And we vow never to do them again. But what we need to do is come clean. We move forward. And we vow never to do it again. That's what we did after Abu Ghraib, and that's what we've done after other times in our history. We're not a perfect nation, but we are a nation that acknowledges our mistakes and we move forward, and we are not going to be inhumane.
Remembering Senator John McCain today, just a few days short of his birthday, actually. He would have been 82, I believe, on Wednesday. And I cannot imagine a more perfect voice to discuss this with than Ken Burns, the great historical documentarian and friend of the show. Thank you, Ken, for being with us, as always. And we've talked, you and I have talked about, and when we were promoting, when you were promoting the Vietnam series, we talked about John McCain's presence in that. He really has been such an important moral voice for America since he returned from that war.
He has indeed, and I think the clip that you picked is absolutely perfect reflection of him. I had the great honor, Ro, of knowing him for 25 years. I testified before a subcommittee in the mid-90s, early to mid-90s, and we became friends and knew him through it. And the first person we went to see when we were thinking about even trying to tackle something as big and as controversial or fraught with, you know, pitfalls as Vietnam with John McCain, and said, look, I'm not going to interview you. You're still in the public sphere. You're going to be in the film archivally, but I just need your help. I need you to set some picks. And you flash ahead 10 and a half years to our premiere, just a little bit after we spoke last, Roe, at the Kennedy Center, and he had seen the whole thing, and he loved it and was filled with the possibility of what a film that was accurately depicting it might do. And he said, I think this is going to save lives, meaning help redeem people who felt that their actions were irredeemable, and to help assuage those who had guilty consciences or were still, you know, beset by the demons that war produces in the hearts of all those who participate in it. But more importantly, he talked a lot about the thing that was in your clip, about how flawed a human being he was, how flawed we were, and how incredibly critical it was, particularly to our democratic experiment, to be willing to be self-examining, to say, you know, I screwed up here. You know, it's sort of like the Friday nighters, Saturday afternoon coach. You said, we stunk here, or we did this. He was always willing to have that self-evaluation. And now we live in an age where people never make mistakes. You support someone blindly without any kind of thought. And John McCain's death this week, I think, offers us the opportunity as we talk and think about who he was and the legacy that he left, but also who we are and who we want to be, what kind of people we want to be. And I think just as Jimmy Stewart makes the decision that he wishes to live in Bedford Falls and not Potterville, so too John McCain insisted that we not live in a Potterville of someone who is sort of checking off every deadly sin sort of gleefully, but rather a place in which we're self-reflective and realize that no one party has the answer, that no one person has the answer, that we are best when we transcend party, as he did so many times in his life, and was serving, as he says, I just wanted to be said that I served something higher than myself. And did I make mistakes? Yes, but did I love the United States of America? And I wanted to be a wholehearted, resounding yes. And what we are doing this week is we are cheering our brother home, who did do that, who did an extraordinary job, and reminds us, particularly in tough times when we're really feeling the kind of fragility of our experience, that we have these pole stars that, regardless of whether they're with us in flesh or not, can lead us on. I've always, as you know, been attached to the enduring legacy of Abraham Lincoln. Now we have in our firmament, we add another sinner, but an imperfect soul, but somebody who I think in these tough times permits us to, regardless of your party, look ahead to what's best for us and rather what's good for me.
You saw that reflected in his final statement. And I've seen parents saying they want their kids to read this and reread it, because it's an important message, how he spoke of how we're weakening our greatness as a nation with these rivalries, these tribal rivalries that have sown resentment, hatred, and violence. Who better a man to deliver that message and make us think about it a little bit than a man who knows all too well how the Vietnam War divided America?
That's right. And he had that experience of being through what the divisive aspects of the Vietnam was. And he partnered with John Kerry, someone on the opposite side of the political spectrum, right, someone who protested his own involvement in the world. And today, you know, later they worked together to make Vietnam to recognize Vietnam. And they are now, despite still being a communist regime, an important economic and strategic partner. But the larger message is exactly what we said. Yep. We have an opportunity now to rededicate ourselves by having parents, by having schools. Let's read John McCain now. Let's hear this plea. It's a very simple idea, and one that has come down through the generations of the American experience, and that is essentially that we are an alloy is stronger than its constituent metals. We are a nation of immigrants. We are made richer. And I don't need to tell anybody within the earshot of the city of Chicago what it means to have an interbraided, interwoven, strong ally because of all the different constituent parts, that we are not about party or individual. We are about what's good for the country. And sometimes this person or that party might have the right answer for just that moment, and sometimes we're not. And when we get fixed into a rut, as we are right now and have been in the past, where it's all ideological, it's all nationalistic, it's all anti-immigrant, it's all blood and soil, the worst kind of instincts of human nature, tribal rather than civilized, where you don't want to have a civil discourse because that would expose you as a fraud, where you take down, you raise back up to full staff the flag that should be down for a week, if not a month, to honor this extraordinary American person who could have gone home from that prison earlier and didn't, refused to do that, who was interviewed by a French journalist after he had several bones set without so much as an aspirin to ease the pain, and then was beaten by his captives for being insufficiently grateful to them in that interview, in which he professed his love for his country and for his wife and for the sense of us. You know, I work in a tiny little place. Ro knows this better than maybe just about anybody on earth. I work in a place where there's that tiny two-letter plural pronoun, us. Feels good to say us or we. And then you raise those to capital letters and it says U.S. My entire professional life has been in a kind of bouncing back between those tiny, not capitalized U.S. and the big capitalized U.S. And John McCain puts himself firmly in that, supporting with his life the United States of America, the greatest experimentation that has ever taken place in humankind, still fragile, but also with the sense that the only way in which we succeed at this experiment is by participating and belonging to this very simple thing that we love to say, us.
You know, I've been thinking about this a lot. You talk about the fact that this is a moment for Americans to stop and reflect,
mm-hmm.
and stop the spinning for a moment. And it is.
Yeah.
And,
amen.
And, you know, when he... when he announced that he was sick a year ago, and as these months drew on and we were starting to hear that he was probably going to pass imminently, and then Friday, the announcement that he had stopped treatment kind of gave us a sense that you know, this was going to be announced fairly quickly. And I've been thinking for weeks now about this notion of, you know, America first, America first, America first. And I think that regardless of when we come out of this political moment, if it's in November or, you know, some place further, we have to think of ourselves as Americans first, not as
right.
America
yeah.
first. And John McCain was that guy who did exactly that.
He was exactly that guy. So here's the key to him. I'm working on a biography of Ernest Hemingway, very complicated, flawed, deeply flawed human being, but arguably one of the great writers of the 20th century. When John McCain was a little boy, 13, 14, 15, he found a four-leaf clover and ran into his father's library and randomly pulled down a volume in which to press the four-leaf clover, this lucky thing. And he pulled down For Whom the Bell Tolls, and he started to read it. It's about an American professor named Robert Jordan, a kind of complicated but flawed but decent man who goes off to fight in support of the loyalists in Spain as the fascists were trying to overthrow the Republican small-r government there. And it's a ragtag band of American liberals and communists and socialists and Trotskyites and Stalin supporting, and it's a deeply flawed cause, as Robert Jordan comes to understand. And if you want to know John McCain, he sort of spent his life trying to live up to this sort of epic novel character, Robert Jordan, who is makes mistakes but serves always something higher than himself. However, even that cause might be imperfect. And what I think is happening right now in the United States, as we watch the petty ordinariness of some in response to his death and the magnificence of his life, that his service to the country will obviously continue way beyond his death, that we will be able to recall not just the obvious sacrifice with regard to spending 5.5 years in a horrific prisoner of war camp in North Vietnam, but what he's done in support of bipartisanship and the real understanding of patriotism in the intervening years. And now in death, I think he'll be a reminder to us of our better selves, our better angels, Lincoln said. And that's, I think he's going to perform his best service to this republic in that regard. And that makes me incredibly happy. And you're right, Ro. Maybe it'll be November, maybe it'll be after that. But we will emerge, and we will be better, and we will be stronger, and maybe it is lawful that we pass through this kind of terrifying crucible in order to come out on the other side more completely committed to serving those principles that John McCain embodied all his life. Did I agree with him politically? Not most of the time. Did I think he was one of the finest human beings I've ever met? Yes. And the last time I saw him, he came up to me, and he knew what was going on, and I'd interviewed him also for a film we've just completed on the Mayo Clinic, which will be out in September. And he's looking straight in my eye and says, you know, they've taken care of me, but I know what's happening. I know what's down the road. And he had a twinkle in his eye, and that twinkle was his peace that he had made with his impending death. And as that interview broke up and the cameramen were putting away the stuff and we were striking the stuff in his office, he came over and he said, I love you, Ken. And I said, I love you too, Senator. And, you know, I just spent the last 2 days kind of walking around. I'm in the Rocky Mountains, this beautiful, majestic place that reminds you that there is something much bigger than yourself. And just been thinking about this man that I had the privilege to know. He and I tried to get a posthumous pardon for Jack Johnson from W and from Obama, and didn't work out. And then all of a sudden, he gets pardoned for all the wrong reasons. And we sort of looked at each other and shrugged our shoulders and said, well, at least it's done. So it's been a very, very complex and very interesting relationship. But for a man of that stature to just be that kind of direct, feeling, you know, we aren't given much time on this earth. And if we don't look at the people that we admire or love or have feelings for and tell them what we feel, we miss real opportunities. And everybody who's a parent listening to me knows exactly what this is about. You know, we experience the great joy of unconditional love. And that's what we need to bring into our public discourse, into our public lives. These people are no different than us. The other is not the other, and it's only the demagogues and the bullies and the dictators that will try to make enemies of everybody. And my God, if you could possibly think that there was something wrong with him being captured and then behaving and acquitting himself the way he did, then, boy, we've got some splaining to do.
We'll leave it there. Ken Burns, I should make the point that they have just now lowered the flag back to half staff at the White House. So and there's another statement that has come out by the president as well, saying that he ordered that and some other things. It appears that there was some political pressure on him to make that that decision. So
I wonder. To do a decent human thing.
Right,
you know?
Right. I think that's kind of what we get to. But thank you so much for your service to this country. You know, we say that to say, and how many times have you and I said that to other people that we've interviewed or met who, you know, go do the fighting and dying for the United States? But you know, I think that your work stands alone as still a sentinel, still a beacon for Americans to look at and think about the arc of history here, and think about Lincoln, and think about World War II, and think about Vietnam, and think about, you know, whatever that moment. Jack Johnson is an excellent example. That documentary was spectacular.
Yep. Civil War.
To talk about where we are this is not a straight line, but it's a line nonetheless. And I think
kind. You know, I'll leave you with one thing, Ro, if I could. The novelist Richard Powers, in his most recent novel, said that the best arguments in the world won't change a single mind. The only thing that can do that is a good story. We are are obligated, whether we're documentary filmmakers or radio personalities or parents with children we're tucking into bed, to tell good stories. And I think the story that we now have the opportunity to tell about John McCain is a really good one, and it's a healing one, and it has durability. It lasts. It isn't fragile the way the bully and the tin horn dictator are. It's real and has depth and reminds us of our best self.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ken. Thank you, my brother.
Thanks, Ken.
Take it easy, bud. Thank you.
Bye. Tom Skilling joins us right now on what is a super hot, super humid day, and he's brought to us by PermaSeal Basement Systems.
Yes. Hello. Happy Monday, guys.
Happy Monday.
Happy Monday,
Tom. Thank you. Did you have a good weekend?
Yes.
Good.
Lovely. Saturday, my gosh. Could there have been? It was pretty gorgeous.
It was lovely. And then yesterday, wow. What a transition, huh?
Heated up.
From autumn to, you know, the intense heat of summer. Yesterday was the third warmest day of the month, and today it's the 20th day that we've hit 100 or 90 or higher at Midway or O'Hare, and 23 days at Midway Airport. And what's interesting about those numbers is that's usually a full year's allocation of temperatures of 90 or higher. So we're moving into surplus territory from this point forward in what has been a warm summer around here.
It has, and it is today. It's a little close, as the Canadians like to say.
Yes.
I'm not sure I'm allowed to quote Canadians right now, but I will anyway.
Well, we love Canadians.
We do.
You know,
we love
can't
Canadians.
Help it. The big guy in D.C. doesn't seem to has his problems.
Yeah.
But
we
you
love
know.
Canadian air.
Yeah,
Canadian
we
air
do.
Masses are always except in the winter. We don't like them then. But we
Canadian Canadian geese, not so much, but.
How about the
okay.
beautiful Canadian Rockies and the lakes in Canada? Yeah, it's a beautiful country.
Yeah, I was back up in northern Michigan this weekend.
Ah, how did that go?
Oh, it went beautifully. It was a little rainy up there, but it's still, you know, the thing about the Midwest, this has been my summer of the Midwest. We need to enjoy our entire environment here. There's so much to see and to explore within a half day's drive of Chicago.
Chicago.
It's true.
And you know, really, when you look at the weather anomalies that have occurred in so many other places, we've done pretty well, all things considered.
This summer, for sure, right?
A beautiful summer.
Beautiful. And yet last night, up in central Wisconsin, up by Lake Winnebago, down to the northwest suburbs of Milwaukee, they were hammered. They had 5 to 7 inches of rain. And we're a little worried about this transition to cooler weather that starts tomorrow night around here, because we could do something like that in parts of our area. But until then, we got another hot day on the way tomorrow. So
we've been very lucky in this respect, though.
Yes.
This year we've had very little tornado activity in our area.
It's true.
Very little severe thunderstorm activity by comparison.
Yeah.
In previous years.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot. It has been almost a textbook so far. Textbook beautiful summer. It's ending, you know, like in terms of the festival summer, it ends this weekend. And it's going to be, you know, we made through. It was good.
Yeah.
I cannot complain. I shall not complain.
Really?
No.
What? Tom, what have you done to Ro today?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
It shows what a little weekend rest will do.
Yes.
You know?
I guess that's it.
And maybe an adult beverage or two, you know.
Let me just say something right now, since you mentioned it. I did not get a lot of rest, and there were a few adult beverages.
Okay.
That's the right formula.
Yeah. That's it. You hit the perfect formula,
whatever you
did this weekend.
Well, wait a minute. Anna, this will bring them down.
You know
what's happening out in Montana? They have 10 inches of snow coming down.
Oh, my God!
And it's higher elevations in Wyoming and Montana actually have winter weather advisors.
Can't hear that.
No.
See, no, he's not ready for that. You know, the other thing is I thought that you would be upset, Ro, because you always remind us of this. We only have so many weeks of summer, and it's kind of coming to a close.
See, we're trying to keep Ro's attitude within a range here. And so if it gets too
high,
then we bring it down a little bit with a dose
nicely
of
done.
Reality.
Nicely
and
done.
Get it to that sweet
you
spot.
Know, this is the thing that when you watch, if Monday Night Football or Sunday Night Football ends up in Denver in the first month in September.
Right.
You always turn that on because there's invariably a snowstorm in September in Denver.
Or some chilly weather, and they're wearing coats, and you're like, wait a minute.
It's 90 the next day there. It's the freakiest weather ever there. But it is. But you can get that, and you're like, oh, no, what are you doing?
I know. Then you start feeling cold all of a sudden. It doesn't matter.
What's this cool down of which you speak?
Well, it's a shot of cooler air. You know, we've got seasonal cooling going on, and they see it first up at the high elevations. So, you know, that's why the West.
But are we
going to
get it now?
No, I don't think we have a lovely transition to a lovely air mass, the middle and end, well, the middle of the week, and that gets warm and humid again later in the week. There are signs we'll be back to the 90s at some point next week. So, don't read anything into that for us.
I will say this. September often is the most beautiful month of the year here, and even the first half of October.
I agree.
And because every day, after the kids go back to school, when I was a kid, and then as a parent, and now as just an observer, I would say that the every day that you get a really nice day is like a steal. It's like, look at this, a bonus!
That's right.
I know.
Well, and you know, the lake is warm, and so this imparts heat to the atmosphere, slows any cool spells that want to come in here down to some extent. That's why we're a big fruit-producing region around the Great Lakes, you know, because especially over in Michigan.
I know. I just
up
had
in the
Michigan
Door Peninsula.
Peaches and blueberries this weekend.
Yeah.
And they were delicious.
Oh, there are some peaches in the store right
peaches.
Now that are, I know.
Phenomenal.
Just great.
Got to get it now, though. This is how it goes.
You got like a very small window.
Back when we were a kid, there was there were like 2 days where you could get peaches, and that was it.
I know.
Now it's months. You can get peaches all the year round, but they're not great. But this time of year, especially the fresh ones from here.
It's true.
And you got to really kind of know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, sometimes they pick them before they're ripe, and you have to let them sit out, you know, at home and ripen. Now, there's a little trick to that, because I never seem to quite bite into them at the right moment, you know, and I'm not enough.
You got to get the feel right. They have
exactly.
A little softness to them.
Okay, what's the trick?
Right. I have no answer for you, Rob.
Oh, I
don't
know. You were going to give us like a cooking tip.
I wish if I knew.
No. Now the bosses at Channel 9 are like, hey, we got a cooking show. Get
Skilling.
Give him some more time.
Yeah, I tell you.
Well, it's like
you want a disaster, put that thing on the air,
it's
you know?
Like that would be fun, though. It's like a flesh thing, though, right? You got to be able to, when you press down on it.
Yeah.
You ever see chefs when they're making meat? And they do that thing where they just poke it with their finger.
Yeah.
Like over the pot.
Yeah.
And you're like, how are they doing that?
Yes.
You got kitchen hands.
I know.
And they know exactly.
It's
just
a talent.
Just by touching it, they know exactly what they got going.
Exactly.
And I think the same thing is with the peach. If it.
It's true.
If it's just a little bit of an indent, you're kind of okay. If it goes too deep, you got to go. Got it. Just
that's true.
Shove it in your mouth immediately if it goes too deep.
That's right.
And then spit out the seed.
Yeah.
One way or the other.
And you see so many people in the produce department who know what they're doing. They'll pick up a pineapple and kind of, you know, feel it, and tomatoes the same thing, pick up and
or a melon, they shake it,
melon,
yeah they're like they I listen know. To it like it's like it's a beating heart. Is it okay?
I know.
Weird. Here's
I
a tip, guys, since we're looking for one. Get a paper bag, put your peach, unripened peach, into the bag, sit at room temperature for 24 hours, check the peach.
Yeah,
it'll taste really good.
Oh, well, that's a very useful piece of advice.
Tom, there you go.
It's funny, I remember one time we were on one of our family vacations and the car was acting up, so we pulled over to the side. My dad went into the engine, and my mother said, "Oh, this ought to be good. He knows about as much about what's going on in there as I do." And I feel the same way with feeling my peaches and my fruits in the produce department. But see, it's information like that.
Hold on. We got to stop.
No,
on
did
that.
You follow
Chris,
all that?
No, no.
Stop right
Chris
there.
Chris Duffy is going to make a promo just out of that sentence.
I know.
I can hear this. I can hear it now.
Yeah, he's sitting back there saying,
"Oh my God, feel my peaches." Just Skilling saying, "Feel my peaches and my fruit and my or whatever it was, whatever he just said." It's perfect. All right,
Chris can take anything that comes out of any of our mouths and make it sound
magic.
Like you
so
know
true.
It's profound. You know,
magic.
Yeah,
magic. Well, it won't be profound. It'll be very funny though, and you may sue to get it off the air. All right, Tom, we will. we'll talk to you tomorrow. Thank
you,
sir.
Thank you. Good to talk to you.
You too, Tom.
Bye, Anna.
Enjoy the day.
You too, Anna. Thanks.
Let's check in now with the great Ryan Burrow.
Indication.
Wait,
why?
Hold on a second. Yeah. I have to say this, otherwise sure. It's going to freak everybody out. In for Judy Pilak with the WGN News. Because, you know, Judy has a fan base. It's basically Judy holding her nose and calling, going, why aren't they mentioning Judy Pilak? So I'm letting you know.
They keep calling here. Get this guy off.
Yes, Judy is off today. Here's Ryan. What's coming up at the bottom of the hour?
Indication now why police in central Illinois think a missing Chinese scholar is dead. We'll have more on that coming up from the WGN Radio Newsroom at 4:30.
Violetta, your traffic being brought to you by you.
Watch Micah and Joe, Micah Mater and Joe Donlin weeknights on WGN TV News at 9. I got you guys a Starbucks card to give to Joe.
That's your guy.
Yeah. It says besties on it, you see?
Oh.
That's for
yeah.
you to give to Joe.
Oh, thank you.
So
yeah,
I put a
little
on
no big deal.
Besties.
Yeah.
I don't think we need to give him that, but I'll send it to him right now.
Yeah, you got to see him to give him that card.
I haven't heard from him in a while, but I know he's thinking about us.
Maybe Violetta can drop that off with him.
He's a busy guy. Maybe I wouldn't read anything into the fact that he doesn't have time for your text messages or your calls.
He talks to me on the street for 15 minutes.
That's weird. Really weird.
Well, I rang his doorbell last night around midnight. Nobody opened the door, so he wasn't home. Yeah.
He's probably at the studio or something.
Then I went in his backyard, and I was knocking on the back window, and nobody was there. So.
What color is his
robe? It's Kev! It's me!
Joe! Remember me? We golfed that one time.
For 10 holes, or was it 11?
Like 8 holes together, Joe!
No, he loved you guys. I know he did.
Did he turn on the sprinklers this time or no?
Yeah, it's a timing thing, you know? It wasn't his fault.
Why are the cops arriving?
They always water the grass at midnight.
Why are the cops?
Come from?
Yeah, I don't know what they were doing there. I was just trying to say hi to my best friend.
So no, guys, weird. It's fine.
I'm best friends with Joe Donlin. It's fine. Wait, ow, you're hurting me. Ow, ow, wait, hold on.
Joe, plastic cuffs, they hurt.
My arm doesn't go that way. Mm-hmm. Ow.
The zip ties are not comfortable.
I have a best friend bracelet. Joe made me this.
Oh, God. Hey, can I mention that today, obviously, we're paying tribute to John McCain throughout the afternoon. We are also going to be talking to the former ambassador to Canada from the United States about the fact that Donald Trump just fired Canada. If this were The Apprentice, he kept Mexico and fired Canada.
I thought he was treating it like, you know, he might treat children or a, you know, competition at work.
Like
well, this one's behaving, you're going
to
get lots of bonuses, and we'll see if you can earn it, sort of thing.
That's kind of what that was. We will talk to the ambassador coming up. Before we do that, Ed Obradovich will be here to tell us what it was that he saw during the Bears game on Saturday afternoon.
I can't
whether
wait.
Whether he liked that or he didn't like that. That's going to be a little something. So we're going to do that. Then we're going to get you to Canada. And then after 5:30, we are on the web.
Ooh.
White Sox baseball takes off at 5:30. So we're on the web after 5:30. And we're going to replay an interview. One of the things we're going to do there is replay an interview that we had last hour with Ken Burns.
So powerful.
The great documentarian, and about his very long relationship with John McCain. And he hasn't talked to anybody else about it.
Brought me to tears. It really did. Powerful words.
We caught him on vacation, and he joined us, and he just actually just sent a note to me saying that he hadn't really had a chance to think about all of this until this moment. So you get to hear sort of the raw emotionalism of a friend and documentarian, a guy who not only followed him but made him a subject of so many things that he's done. It really, really, really powerful. And that's coming your way in the 6 o'clock hour on the web at WGNRadio.com and all the associated other places that you can find us on the TuneIn and on the WGN app, all the places you can find us digitally. That's why the Google is good for you. Just Google the WGN and they'll tell you where to go. I could tell you, but it will just take too much time. It will be too confusing. Ryan Burrow has the WGN News being brought to you by Penny Mustard Furnishings. Brocon Show with Anna DeBlanchis right here on 720 WGN.
Yes.
And we got one of our favorites, if not our favorite. Well, it's been a really great day because I've said this to almost everybody who's been on the program. He's really our favorite guest.
A lot of our favorites.
OB, Ed Obradovich joins us right now. Uh-oh. I'm hearing myself, self.
Little feedback.
Are you in a stadium? Adium?
Oh,
this is going great.
I don't know what's going on there. Are we on a speakerphone? Are you the president of Mexico? What's going on here, OB?
No, yeah, we're on my speakers. Okay, I'll go off.
Yeah, let's go back on that. There we go.
He hits his dials like the desk when he's mad.
Hey, can you hear us,
strong
OB?
Fingers.
Is that better?
That's better, thank you.
Wait a minute.
There you go.
Is that better?
Oh, that's even better.
Okay.
All right. This just couldn't. Now it's the best it's ever been. All right. Hey, OB, I'm just going to say one thing, and then I'm going to run for the hills like I like to do with you. Okay.
Let me set you up for this. Right. I don't know what you're going to ask me, but I don't have an answer.
Okay. Here it is. No, you will have an answer to this. You will. Why didn't they play Mitchell Trubisky? I'll sit down and wait for my beating.
That's an absolute. I don't know if there's something beyond the word mystery. I mean, they said, 34 guys? And most of the people that you saw play Saturday in Soldier Field, they're not going to be around. They're not going to be on the team. They're not going to be here. So what kind of bothers me is going through the five exhibition games. The first one, obviously, was the Hall of Fame game against the Ravens. Okay, none of the first teamers played. Trubisky didn't play. Then we play the Bengals, and he was in two series. And in the two series, we were minus 4 yards. And then they pulled him. Let me repeat that again. Against the Bengals, two series, we were minus 4 yards and pulled them. Then Denver, he goes 9-for-14, he throws a TD, and he has one interception. Just plays a little bit in the first quarter. Against, obviously, the Chiefs last Saturday, did not play. And against the Bills, he will not play either. So that's basically three games where he has not played. Now, let's compare that to the New England Patriots.
All right.
With a coach by the name of Bill Belichick, who has a quarterback, Tom Brady,
yes,
41 years old, 5 Super Bowl rings. He's played in the last 2 games. And in the last game, Friday night, he played the entire first half, went 12-for-18 for a little over 100 yards, no TDs, no interceptions, and Trubisky is sitting on the bench talking to the players. Now you tell me if this coaching staff is on board.
I have a theory on that, by the way. I have a theory that Bill Belichick is trying to kill Tom Brady by putting him out there. He doesn't like him, and he wants him off the team. I think that's what's going on. All right, well, I guess the theory here's what I keep hearing, and Kev, you tell me if this makes any sense, is that they're trying to keep under wraps what their offense is going to look like.
Well, I think that's part of it. I think the biggest thing, and we heard Matt Nagy rationalizing or attempting to rationalize his decision after the game, was simply he just wants to be fully healthy for week one. But as OB just said, you missed an opportunity to get better.
Kevin, I absolutely was enthused about this guy, Nagy, whatever have you. Tariq Cohen, we don't know. I don't even know if he's on the team. I guess we're hiding him for that super explosion against the Green Bay Packers Sunday night.
Yeah.
I, for the life of me, can't figure out. But there's one thing that I can tell you. There's one thing I do know about this damn game. You've got these exhibition games. You've got to play some of the people. You've got them from getting in shape, running, hitting, moving sleds, doing all that. You think you're in great shape. Go out and play your first or second exhibition game, and by the time the third quarter comes around, you're really sucking air. So these guys, none of these guys are going to be in shape, in playing shape, to play against the Green Bay Packers. And, and I hearken back to what I just said a couple minutes ago. You got a guy that's 41 years old playing the first half with 5 Super Bowl rings on, and we got a kid that hasn't even played enough games to say one season, and out of the 5 exhibition games, he's sitting 3 of them playing nobody. Are you worried about getting Cody Whitehair, our crack center? Are you worried about getting him hurt? Oh. Are you worried about getting these other guys hurt, our receivers? Get them out there, get some timing, get some practice, get some real hitting, and they have not done it and will not do it. And I just got to tell you this. all hell will break loose on Nagy and his coaching staff if we go up to Green Bay and they pick us apart and eat us up alive. Because if you go up there and it's late in that third quarter and in that fourth quarter, if it's a tight game and you got our guys sucking air big time because they're not in shape, watch out.
Hey, OB, you mentioned Cody Whitehair, and they're playing musical chairs again with that offensive line. James Daniels.
By the way, he loves this.
Yes.
Bring this up with OB.
Make sure you bring that up.
I like to go with OB to his cardiologist and then bring up Cody Whitehair right as they're taking his blood pressure.
See where it goes. Yeah. Well, James Daniels now, he played Saturday. He's the guy, the interior lineman they drafted from Iowa this year, and it sounded like he was going to get reps at left guard. Now he's been playing a lot of center, and then maybe Cody Whitehair back to guard. How do you see that sorting itself out, and do you think James Daniels will win that starting center spot?
I think he eventually will. Let me tell you something. Okay, Kevin. Daniels went to Iowa, and guess what he played for 4 years? Center. We draft Cody Whitehair second, played offensive tackle, I believe at Kansas State, and guess what they did the first game? They started him at center. Think somebody has to have a screw loose up there?
Yeah, All right, okay. So let me just ask about a couple of the other kids, though. Chase Daniel's not a kid. He's actually a journeyman backup quarterback, getting paid a lot of money to not play. But he played very well on Saturday.
Against starters, too. The Chiefs played all their starters for a large chunk of that game.
So that makes you feel good in case, you know, something bad happens. And then this Wims kid, the wide receiver, had an amazing day. And, hey, Kevin White caught a pass. And if you actually put OB, me and OB played the game, but me, Kev, OB, or Anna out there, all four of us could have caught that exact same pass and gone in for that touchdown.
Not sure about
because
that.
Because the defenseman forgot what stadium he was in.
The blown coverage.
Yeah, and he caught the ball, and then he turned around. And then Kevin White, after 4 years of total futility and injury, turns around and taunts the guy with the ball.
It's not allowed,
Can anybody explain that to me?
Well, after 4 years of that kid doing absolutely nothing, I gave up on him a long time ago. You know, if he can come through this year, I think the whole damn bottom line is this. We're so tired. The Bears won 5 games last year. They won 3 games the year before, 5, 3, 2. They've been in double-digit loss for, the last 4, 5, 6 years? I want these kids to be good.
Yeah.
But I can tell you from my experience and in talking with Dan Hampton, I'm going to tell you, if you think you're going to go out there up in Green Bay and flip that on button and you're going to be going 100 miles an hour, you got another thing coming. Four quarters, the third and fourth one are pretty tough. Yeah.
What were the bright spots, OB? You see anything there, or was it just too difficult to tell because you didn't see enough of the starters? I mean, are you seeing anything develop that you really like?
Anna, no, I don't. I sit here, I don't know what to tell you. What could I tell you? How much has Trubisky improved from his first year last year to this year? You don't know.
Right.
His first game, exhibition game he played in Denver, he played 2 series and were minus yardage with an interception. And then he plays, he's only played in a couple games and a few series, a few plays, and that's it. So I don't know how to tell you. I don't know how good Howard's going to be running. I don't know if Kyle Long can play a full game. I don't know if Cody Whitehair or Williams is going to be a center. You don't know. And the reason why you don't know, nobody's played.
2 weeks from today, we'll be sitting here talking about how the Bears shocked the NFL by destroying Green Bay in Green Bay.
That would be great.
Or I'm not going to show up for work. All right, thank you, OB. Appreciate it.
Thanks, OB.
Bye.
Love hearing from you.
All right, let's check in now. What's going on in the newsroom?
Senator Dick Durbin remembering John McCain here on WGN. We'll have that more coming up from the WGN Radio Newsroom at 5 p.m.
Thank you, Ryan. Violetta.
Also, tune in to the Steve Cochran Show tomorrow morning. Mary Sandberg is always hungry, so she's eating her way through the Chicago Pedway. 6:20. She'll tell you about all the delicious offerings in the Pedway. People don't often know the Pedway.
Yeah.
Haven't figured it out yet. Have you guys?
Discovering
all the time.
We work in the Pedway area, and we have been trying to, and it's really something. Coming up, After 5 o'clock, your chance to win a pair of tickets to the Blackhawks Training Camp Festival on Saturday, September 15th at United Center, courtesy of Mathnasium, changing lives through math. Buy tickets at ChicagoBlackhawks.com or Ticketmaster, 800-745-3000. Speaking of hockey, you know, there's hockey in Canada, and
yes,
the former ambassador to Canada is with us. I see how he made that transition.
Great
right there.
Segue.
I don't understand, Bruce Heyman, can you explain to me this, Mr. Ambassador, what happened at the White House today in that teleconference that the president awkwardly had with the president of Mexico? And he basically said, we've done a trade deal with Mexico. NAFTA is dead. You know, we'd like to work with Canada, but we'll just have to, we'll see. What in the hell is that?
So the president's had a bad few weeks, as you have accurately reported along the way. And I think that there is a small opening to get a trade deal done with NAFTA. That deal requires a deal bringing together three parties to do a deal. Now, forgetting all the bluster and all the talk, I got a deal with Mexico, we're going to call it the Mexico deal and do all this, not legally possible right now, not under the rules of Congress, which he has the authority to even begin negotiating this right now. But forget all of that. What was done this last week was that they got Mexico to agree to increase the content of cars to be just North American content, and they got them to increase the wages for some portion of the cars being produced to higher wages, which combats the argument that has been made throughout the Midwest that factories are moving, auto factories are moving to Mexico because they have such low wages. So he forced them to raise their wages. That is a good thing for NAFTA. That is a good, that was an impediment that was out there. Canada was not in those discussions, but not to worry. Canada has high wages that they pay, and the U.S.-Canada trade relationship is in balance where it's not in balance in Mexico. So the reality is that in the next 4 days, why are the next 4 days even important? You come up with all these crazy deadlines. Well, in 4 days, if that they announce that they have a deal, and it would be a deal just in principle because they would not be able to do all the dotting the I's and crossing the T's, then it would trigger a 90-day notification to Congress. And 90 days later, let's just roll forward, would be about the last day of President Peña Nieto's term. And he would be able to sign off on this NAFTA agreement so NAFTA doesn't get thrown to the new president who takes office in December. And so that's why everybody's scrambling right now. Now, they got that part of the deal done with Mexico. If compromise is in the president's heart, if compromise is in our trading partner's heart, we could get an announcement in the next 4 days that an agreement in principle and NAFTA is done. And that's what happened. And that's why it's actually good news. But I think the president, you know, he goes a little too far. He doesn't have a trade agreement with Mexico. He does. It just that's not the way this works. And if he wanted a trade agreement with Mexico by itself, then he has to notify Congress. He has to get trade promotion authority. It's 180 days. And then, you know, the reality is they're operating under an approval of updating this agreement between Canada, Mexico, and the U.S.
And do you, these updates, do you think they benefit the United States?
Yeah, I think they do. I think, frankly, you know, NAFTA was benefiting at late stages in the United States. Now, the early days of NAFTA, I think that there were factories that were impacted by this lower wages that were in Mexico. But I think in reality, what we're seeing in U.S. factories is we're losing employment because of technology more than anything else, robotics and innovation and, you know, and all of that. So, but I think, you know, Canada and Mexico together represent like $1.3 trillion worth of trade. And, you know, but for the United States and all of us coming together. And so the reality is that this is a really important deal for us. And Americans, in the state of Illinois, our number one trading relationship is with Canada, and that's true for 35 states. And nobody wants to see NAFTA blow up, But the president got a little aggressive with his language and maybe distracted by a phone call that didn't work right, and then all the questions coming in on Senator McCain. And I don't think it worked out as exactly as he would have planned. But the stock market loved it. And so I think the market is seeing a reduction of trade conflict, and that's a good thing.
Will Canada sign on to some of the terms that the president is indicating? He's made this pact, according to his words, with Mexico. Is this something that Canada would sign on to? Is Canada going to continue negotiations? Where does it stand? Because it is three nations involved in NAFTA, and right. Now he says he's got this side deal with Mexico, and we're all like, what's happening with Canada?
Yeah, so I think Canada is ready to negotiate and ready to compromise. But if the president puts a gun to their head and makes certain demands that are beyond just what anybody would think is normal compromise, I think Canada will not go down that path. They're not going to capitulate, but they will compromise. There's one thing that's hanging out there, of all things. I hate to be so technical, but there are all these chapters in NAFTA. There are like 30 chapters, and there's this one chapter, 19, which is about dispute resolution between countries. And so what ends up happening is right now that a tribunal gets put together. They pick, judges on each side, arbitrators, and they decide how this dispute should be worked out. What the U.S. would like to do is get rid of that entirely and say, just sue me. You know, just go to my court if you don't like what's going
right.
on.
Yeah, that's, by the way, Trump's bumper sticker on his car.
Just sue me. So the reality is the Canadians, even when the first NAFTA was put forth, they said, that's nuts. We can't just do every deal and then you guys are going to decide whether the deal's good or bad. We would like an independent body. We can both pick people to sit on that body. So Canada almost walked away from NAFTA when it was first done 25 years ago. And so now there's talk that the U.S. wants to scrap that. I think there are paths to compromise on that, but if they demand that is it, you can't, there's no dispute mechanism, Canada might have to walk away from the deal, which would be really problematic. And then the president would want to retaliate and start taxing their cars. And then if they tax their cars, our cars are going to go up in price because so much of our automobile production
their
is made
jointly
together.
Our cars are their cars. Exactly. That's very confusing.
Exactly.
Yeah, all right, exactly. Ambassador, thank you very much. Appreciate it, sir.
Pleasure.
Ambassador.
Always good.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Ambassador.
Ambassador Bruce Hayman right there. Formerly the ambassador to Canada from the United States on a day where the president told, I don't love you, Canada, anymore. I don't love you.
I'm going to hug Mexico.
I'm hugging Mexico. Please don't give me food poisoning.
And I just found out what NAFTA is, and now he's going to change the name.
Yep. Here is Ryan. Well, actually, no. Let me tell you this. Ryan Burrow has the WGN News coming your way in 2 little minutes. Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN.
Happy Monday, everybody.
Thank you, Mr. Burrow. In for Judy.
In for Judy.
Judy's going to sue if we don't mention her name.
She's going to take her couch back.
She loves this couch.
I
put a couch in the newsroom.
Do not tell her someone put powdered sugar on there.
Walter Eastman. Is that powdered sugar? But Walter,
it's clean now, everyone. You cannot touch it, okay?
Just don't smell it.
It's radio. It. If you see powder of anything, call the authorities. It's a beautiful newsroom. And Walter E. Smith came in. They decorated all of our offices. And Judy literally threatened them into building a living room in the newsroom.
And I don't think it makes any sense. She's like, you see this? I said, yeah.
Because every
like,
newsroom obviously needs a couch, guys, right? I've seen a grand total of 3 people sit on it only to take a picture on it.
Because Judy scared everybody.
It's a very nice couch.
It's a beautiful couch.
For a living room, it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Gorgeous.
Right. Well, I could see Dave Schwann taking a little cat nap on there in
the
weekend.
That's the problem with the couch in the work environment.
That sounded dirty in some way. I don't know why. Hold on, please.
It's the top 5 on the Rokan Show.
5.
Let's go.
4, 3, 2, 1.
Now, it's the top 5 at 5 on the Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
Checking in at
Number five.
When President Trump made the new trade agreement announcement in the Oval Office today, he brought in Mexico President Enrique Peña Nieto by speakerphone. This was a mistake.
It really was.
And we look very much forward to it. And I believe the president is on the phone. Enrique?
Enrique.
Yeah, you can hook him up.
Enrique?
You tell me when. How are you? It's a big thing. A lot of people waiting.
Introducing President Peña Nieto.
Hello? Do you want to put that on this phone, please? Hello?
Okay. Barron! Barron, get in here!
Be helpful.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay, we're still waiting.
Enrique.
President Trump.
Thank you.
President Trump, how are you? Good morning.
Thank you, Enrique, and congratulations. That's really a fantastic thing. We've all worked very hard.
Okay. If you are the host of this conference call, please press 1 now.
Oh, your man. User ID number.
Yeah.
Okay. There's a great mashup of that hello conversation set to Lionel Richie's hello if you want to go check it out. It's out there. Just as amazing as you might imagine.
I just walked in. There's a TV on in the room and I started looking. I go, this is
it's not going well.
It's like moments ago and they're showing it for the first time. And I'm like, am I really watching this? Is this really happening?
When is SNL back? I mean, because this is total material. Yeah. But it's not all right, though.
It worked out. The stock market loves it. They're gonna hug. There's mm-hmm. It's kind of a nice thing. So
President Nieto would like to hug him. So yes. And he would hug back. It would be very nice.
That's what we learned at the end of that very awkward moment.
Got awkward.
But there was a guy behind him pressing buttons, and a couple times he hit the button. It's like when Grandpa. He is basically Grandpa at the table. Like, kind of, you know, he's angry. He's always got something to say. You kind of love him because he's grandpa, and he's got a real nice house, so you like going there for Thanksgiving. But there's something awkward.
He's proudly trying to show off his deal making prowess, but then his speakerphone technological non prowess got in the way of it. It felt like kind of sat there, like, oh,
exactly. Mm-mm. All right, let's check in at
number 4,
Neil Simon. The playwright whose name was synonymous with Broadway comedy and commercial success for decades helped redefine the popular American musical and the popular American humor of just your straight-up plays. Mm-hmm. Right? So, he's dead, by the way. I should point that out. I missed that. He has passed away at the age of 91. And he is throughout the 1960s and 70s, if you put his name on anything, a Neil Simon play, a Neil Simon mm-hmm. movie, it sold. So here's what Simon once said about writing for the stage and the screen.
Well, for me, the dialogue comes last. I think people get the image that I sit down and write a lot of jokes. I think of a story. I think of characters, mostly. The dialogue comes last. The dialogue surprises me. There is no formula for it. I just hope that what I find funny, the rest of America would find funny.
Yeah. Neil Simon was 91. Ryan, what's going on in the WGN newsroom?
The Chicago Fire Department says they don't believe a fire that killed 8 people in the Little Village neighborhood was set intentionally. More on that coming up at 5:30.
Violetta?
Time to show New York they aren't the only ones who make pinstripes look good. White Sox, Yankees, tonight at 6 on WGN TV Sports.
All right, 5:55 continues right here on 720 WGN. We're up to
number 3.
Steve James, the genius behind Hoop Dreams, has a new show on Starz, which is poised to thrust age to suburban Chicago high school into the center of a national conversation on race and equality. It's very interesting because this time he's training his cameras on 12 students over the course of an academic year at Oak Park River Forest High School.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's obviously an affluent high school, but it borders a very tough part of Chicago.
Oak Park, this school is crazy. It's like a social experiment.
In this community, there are levels of diversity, but we mentioned race, all hell breaks loose.
My white friends, they don't even know who Malcolm X is, don't know who Biggie Smalls is.
I don't have black friends, I have black acquaintances.
It's so white.
Charles Donaldson III, who is a senior there, tells the Sun-Times that he's glad that light is being shed on the school.
I think that what this film does very well is that it normalizes and humanizes adolescent experience for children of color. Because I think as children of color, especially black kids, that's something that's taken away from us. And I think that the more you show it, the more you humanize it, the more you'll remember that, like, again, like, we're just kids. Like, I think that happens a lot. The kids are the ones that suffer the most.
It is interesting because Steve James is such a great filmmaker.
He is.
And he catches that adolescent and that high school student so well in a documentary that it's really...
no question.
It's very, very...
The subtlety, the pain, the angst, all of it.
Right. And just the day-to-day life.
Right.
The way that a kid is living and it seems very normal, but then when they step down, when you focus on that kid, when he's out of your sight, which is the interesting, like, out of the sight of adults. It's a really interesting, he's got a brilliant filmmaker. So that's definitely worth seeing on Stars. And speaking of documentaries, coming up after, we are going to go to baseball at 5:30, but the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis continues on the air, on the web, on the airweb, on the internet. 5:30. So join us at WGN Everywhere, which is the WGN Radio app, WGNRadio.com, and you can ask your smart speaker to play WGN on whatever device you have on TuneIn or let's go with TuneIn. That's the best way to do that. All right?
That's a great way.
Okay, everybody good
with
that?
We're on the same page.
All right. And then we're going to replay as part of it. We've an hour and a half show, but we've got some special stuff there. Mark McKinnon is going to join us. We're also going to replay an interview that we had with Ken Burns, the great documentarian about John McCain. That's coming your way after 6:30 on the World Wide Web at WGNRadio.com. Do not miss it. All right, we've worked our way to this.
Number two.
Sacha Baron Cohen, last night, season finale of Who Is America. Who did he get this time? O.J. Simpson.
Ma vai usare qua, perché devo andare?
We're gonna talk a business now.
Ma va. Ma guarda questo, d'un po'.
Gorgeous.
She's gorgeous, but sometimes I wanna kill her, you know?
Hey.
No, but I've been a very unlucky in love. No. My ex-wife.
Seem lucky in love to me.
Yeah, but I don't love her. Sometimes I want to completely kill her.
Stop!
No.
Stop!
If I do, you introduce me to Cochrane.
Yeah, Johnny, right? I would have to introduce you in the afterlife.
What? You didn't kill him too, did you?
Stop!
Trying to coax that confession out of him.
Oh, my God.
Called him a lady killer. We're both lady killers.
Yes, it was... It was pretty great. That's the button on the series. That was the end of the series. And it was, you're like shocked. Your mouth drops open when you see it. Oh my God, it's OJ.
Sarah Palin did not appear because remember she was suing him over being duped in that interview and apparently was just listed in the credits rolling as a special publicity consultant because she helped so much with the publicity.
That's true. It's interesting why they didn't. There'll be a story behind that.
There will be.
Both sides will declare victory and go home on that. I don't know exactly.
I believe that's true.
What that's all going to be about. But it was definitely worth the series had its awkward moments. There are some things that seem a little unfair, but then there were some classic moments. And last night was a pretty good way to end the series. And then because it was a false end, like you're watching it, it's over, and then all of a sudden it pops back up and there's OJ. And you're like, oh no. Oh boy. Oh, God.
Lady killers.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we'll see. Will there be more? Did he do more of this? It'll eventually work its way out into the internet. My guess is yes.
Mm-hmm.
My guess is that there will be fairly significant internet coverage.
I would think so. Showtime is not commenting about the Sarah Palin thing yet, so we'll have to see what comes out there in terms of why not. Was it the lawsuit? Was it just, I don't know, was it publicity? Maybe there wasn't enough there in that interview?
I don't know, and I also wonder if the potential for legality here. It seems like they spent a ton of money making that show. Because they had this set. It doesn't show on the screen. It shows in the setup. Because they actually were throwing fake banquets for these people to con them into believing that they were receiving an award.
Right.
To set up some of the stuff they did with their Israeli defense guy, Colonel Aran Murad, which was one of the characters he was playing. There were a bunch of other. They spent so much money creating, and they were flying people all over the country, duping these people, trying to convince them that other things were going on that potentially were actually not going on.
It worked. Got them to do a lot of strange things.
Yes. Yes, it did. But it is where, I mean, it depends on where your politics are. He does make fun. It wasn't just Trump he was going after or conservatives.
Bernie Sanders sat down, a couple other Democrats.
Yes. All right. Let's get right to this. And finally.
Number one.
John McCain, United States Senator. Dead at the age of 81.
The truth is sometimes a hard pill to swallow. It sometimes causes us difficulties at home and abroad. It is sometimes used by our enemies in attempts to hurt us. But the American people are entitled to it nonetheless. I call on all Americans to not despair of our present difficulties, but to believe always in the promise and greatness of America, because nothing is inevitable here. Americans never quit. We never surrender. We never hide from history. We make history.
We have nothing to fear from each other. We are arguing over the means to better secure our freedom and support the general welfare. But it should remain an argument among friends who share an unshaken belief that in our great cause and in the goodness of each other, we are Americans first, Americans last, and Americans always.
Every life has to end one way or another. I'm very happy. I'm very happy with my life. I'm very happy with what I've been able to do. And there's two ways of looking at these things, and one of them is to celebrate. You've been around a long time, old man. You've had a great life. You've had a great experience. I want when I leave, that the ceremony is at the Naval Academy, and we just have a couple of people that stand up and say, this guy, he served his country.
The top five at five.
And let me ask you something.
Square root of 400 also, Ro.
Is a...
Since we're doing math. Just want to throw that one in there.
I
went to mathnasium once. See, I learned that.
And that was you took that away from it.
That was my takeaway.
You know the square root of everything now because you.
No, just that one. I haven't taught me all of them yet.
Okay.
I'll go back for that.
144. Do you know the square root of 144?
12.
Yeah, there you go. That's correct. That's.
That one I think I learned in grade school.
All right, Violetta, do you know the square root of 4?
2.
Ah, yes. Yes.
See.
There you go.
Building blocks of life. Mm-hmm. Thanks for giving me that one.
Let's
not go over another one.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Quit while you're on top.
Yes, that's what we're going to do.
Don't I always.
22, yeah. Now, I like the way they're coming up with this, though. It's very interesting because you got to add 2 to get to number 20.
Mm-hmm.
But that,
very
that,
creative.
But then it confuses people in the legal standards and practices department here at WGN.
Are you giving that to number 12 and number 8 or just the number 20?
You're going to have to file a report. You're going to have to put a memo together on that one.
There's going to be some paperwork associated with this contest now.
Square root of 2,000. Kevin.
I'm busy right now.
44.721359555.
We're only doing whole numbers
here.
I just...
When my teachers call me, I just tell them I was busy.
Yeah, I'd be like, sorry.
I'll get back to you later.
I got
that thing, teacher.
I got that thing.
Can you go to the bathroom?
Yeah.
I'll be back in 20 minutes.
All right.
They never wanted to pick on me. My hand was straight up.
I couldn't see you in the back of the classroom.
Any chance to talk. Even if I didn't have the answer.
Not much has changed, right?
Yeah. No. Nothing, in fact, has changed.
Me, pick me.
Yeah. All right. I would try to give you another one, but I can't even think of any.
No more square roots?
No more square
64
roots.
64 is anything?
Yeah. Uh-huh. 81? Got anything by 81?
I'm drawing a blank.
81.
You got anything coming up for 81?
No. 9. Right. God, how could I not get that one?
See? We could do square roots all day here if we wanted to.
But we really shouldn't, because it would really get embarrassing pretty fast.
Coming up on the World Wide Web, on the WGN Everywhere, we're going to replay some of our interview with Ken Burns, the great American filmmaker, mm-hmm. right? He made from the Civil War, all the great wars, basically, mm-hmm. he has documented. He also documented the story of Jack Johnson. He tells a very interesting story about how he and John McCain, whom he has known for decades, how he and John McCain had been trying to get Jack Johnson, the boxer, pardoned, officially pardoned, posthumously pardoned,
mm-hmm.
by a number of presidents, and finally Donald mm-hmm. Trump did it.
Hmm.
As Mr. Burns says, not for the right reasons, but he did it.
But he knew John McCain as a friend, and then included him in his documentary on the Vietnam War, and had just such powerful words. It's an amazing interview. Just
there was not a dry eye in the House, and it is the most, of all the tributes that have poured in for John McCain, this stands at the very top of them. His take on John McCain's life and legacy and what he meant to America writ large, mm-hmm. and why he is one of the most important. I think there's a lot of people today, I would imagine the kids right now are thinking mm-hmm. this exact thing, like, what's such a big deal about this guy? But when you hear the story and why John McCain was so important, ran for president twice, he unsuccessfully, of course, but he was a guy who stood up to stand away from the politics of this country and stood up for what was right and what was wrong in the American value system. That's what he did. He always stood aside from the politics in ways that nobody else had the guts to do. And to this day, nobody else has. You know, you see how absolutely wrapped in fear politicians are in Washington, you know, who want to just toe the line. They can't come across the line in any way. And John was constantly moving back and forth between them and driving Republicans crazy, angering Democrats, making people just nutty all the way along. But he stood for his brand of Americanism, and that's how that worked.
That was a pretty civil race between him and Obama in 2008, wasn't it? I mean, comparatively speaking, I guess, to what we've seen in recent years.
Well, it's interesting because you're seeing a lot of criticism of him today, like, well, why, if you look at the ads, all the things you said about Obama, but he didn't say the things about Obama that would have been said had, well, Donald Trump run for president or, you know, anything like that. It was really about policy, and that's where it should be. That's where the argument should always be. It should be about policy. It shouldn't be about anything more
personal attacks or...
Yeah. And, I mean, even the personal... There's always been, you know, personal moral attacks in American politics. You could go back. What's really interesting is if you have an opportunity, it's all over the internet now, you can see newspaper articles from the early part of the 20th century. And American politics from about 1900 to 1915 was all about that. And they were, and because, you know, Chicago had, I think at that point, 12 newspapers, 12 daily newspapers.
Think about that.
Because there was no radio and there was no television. And so if you wanted to go see something, you went to go see a bunch of people dancing around naked on a stage, or you read a newspaper. And the newspapers were entertainment. Yes, they had people dancing around naked on stage back then, too. At least that's what my grandfather told me. I don't know.
And we'll now, take his word
now,
for it.
Now mm-hmm. I'm embarrassed because I said that right in front of A.B. Stoddard, who's waiting.
Going to want that back.
Yes, on the Super Celebrity Hotline. But the point is, politics in America has always been rough and tumble. But personal attacks that are designed just to pick at an underlying tribalism that humans have, it's ingrained in us. Tribalism. It's a personality feature that, if provoked, all of us will default to. And the point is that to have the President of the United States trying to provoke individuals in the United States into choosing a tribe because it benefits him by dividing and conquering, it's a pretty dishonorable thing. And John McCain was not a guy who stood for that. That's why John McCain stood up. It would have been very easy, AB, for John McCain when that you know, crazy old lady came up to him at that debate and said that Barack Obama's an Arab, right? That whole thing. For him to go, we got a lot of questions about that guy. And it would have solidified that group that Donald Trump now lives on.
You're absolutely right. That was, that really is a moment that was famous at the time, but now obviously speaks so many more volumes in our current frame of reference in terms of the political fights and the toxic tribalism, to see him back down and not take advantage of that moment and risk, losing voters and the wrath of whoever, the right-wing talk show hosts at the time, but now Breitbart and, other Fever Swamp resources are making fun of him just for dying. But anyway, it is an amazing thing what happened today, because, and it really will go down, in history books along with so many other offenses of the Trump administration and the Trump presidency, and the Trump candidacy when he went after Gold Star family and on, his line that he honors veterans and their service and their sacrifice and their courage is always belied by these outbursts of his. And so it took veterans groups to shame him today into backing down on John McCain.
Okay, so what is your understanding of that?
I was going to say, what we used to have was politics stopped at the water's edge, and politics stopped when people died, but also when heroes, the likes of which we never had, a man who's more than, bunches of us could ever amount collectively to be, there was never anything like this before, ever.
What is your understanding of why that the whole
flag
controversy from earlier today? The standard protocol is that the flag for, just when they're going to lower the White House flag, it's based on the passing of someone. That, let's say they pass on a Saturday. It's all Saturday, and then the next full day afterwards. Now, obviously, an American historical figure, the size of which is John McCain, and I can think of a handful of others in our lifetime that were not presidents of the United States that would rise to the that platform that John McCain stood on in American history. And to have the president not sign off on, we'll extend it till he's interred, or extend it, for a month, or whatever they want to do.
Right.
It was I think, stunning to everybody. And when the president was in the White House today, and he was there was an African head of state that was there. There was the wackiest, most awkward phone call, conference call, speaker phone call in the history of speaker phone calls.
So awkward.
He was in front of the press three separate occasions, mm-hmm. and they were screaming at him, what about John McCain? What about John McCain? Say something about John McCain. He crossed his eyes. I'm sorry, he crossed his arms, and he just sat there silent, glaring at the press for asking him the question, and the flag was at full staff.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, they dropped it at about 3 o'clock this afternoon, Chicago time, down to half staff. And what do we know about that?
Well, it was a very dark day at the White House, because people, he watched over the weekend as all of his strongest allies, Mike Pompeo, Newt Gingrich, you name it, stepped up and honored McCain's sacrifice. And he didn't. And then with this flag kerfuffle this morning, it came raining down from all quarters and all corners. And I think there were a lot of private threats that went out, that I'm going to abandon you. I'm going to go on TV and say this is disgusting. Anthony Scaramucci was on Twitter saying, you can't make someone's death a hero's death about politics. He didn't have anyone in his corner today. And I think we might learn later on there were actually threats of resignations at the White House. No one was cheering him on. Everyone was saying it's the wrong thing to do and you'll regret it. And so we saw after the a couple of official, veterans groups came out and said, you must lower the flag. You must honor his sacrifice. You must put out a presidential statement. We saw him, you know, do a full reversal with a really, you know, respectful statement about how he's going to send Pence on Friday to the ceremony at the Capitol, that he's going to have Mattis, Secretary Mattis, and NSA, National Security Advisor John Bolton, attend the funeral in his stead, and, you know, to represent his administration. And I think it was because he was totally alone and no one would back him up. And I think they were telling him tomorrow will be an even darker day if you let this continue.
The American Legion, like the largest veterans organization in the country, came out about an hour before they lowered the flag again today and wrote a very powerful statement. I'm sure you saw it, AB. It was about this year you released presidential proclamations noting the deaths of Barbara Bush and Billy Graham, and then went on to list what Senator John McCain did to our country, basically saying, you need to do this. Now, 1 hour later, he lowered it, and I can't imagine it's just the veterans groups, but don't you think other people within his administration were pressuring him as well, Mattis among them, or John Kelly, and those types of people who he's now said are going to be attending the funeral, even though he won't, it seems like?
They disagreed with him. They wanted him originally to the weekend. Well, we know that he folded today because he was isolated and he didn't have anyone to bring him on. What I believe said was I really believe that we were going to hear through tomorrow.
AB, hold on 1 second. Hold on 1 second. We'll try to get this. Can you pick up there and see if we can help that situation along?
Right. The last line of that, the statement from the president when it was revised this afternoon, Ro, you read it on the air earlier. It's, finally, I've asked General John Kelly, Secretary James Mattis, and Ambassador John Bolton to represent my administration at his services. You know, McCain's family had said, had asked that President Trump not be there, and he will have representatives from his administration. Doesn't look like Melania is going either. There was some question about whether or not she would attend.
I think that would be the good move if Melania went instead. And one of the things that's trending on Twitter, and AB is back right now, is John McCain's dead party. Okay. And it is a number of sort of nationalist figures on the right that, you know, we've heard from. The InfoWars guy and some others that, you know, that are on that, you know, using that hashtag. And it is interesting to me that what, you know, in this moment, this provocation that comes out now on social media that again sets the very bright line of divide between people. And what you're seeing here is the divide is defined by something that is in obviously bad taste or ill humor or out of hatred or spite or all the negative emotions that are that define these things. And it is amazing to me that people consistently want to find themselves on the side of the mean as opposed to the side of, well, it's, you know, I don't necessarily agree with that. But to be just so bitter, and that seems to sell. And then you wonder why we can't get along at Thanksgiving. This is the reason. I mean, John McCain, I don't care where your politics are. I don't care. We put Democrats on today. We put a ton of Democrats on today talking about how amazing John McCain is.
Right.
He just was. He's just his story, whether you liked him or not, or whether you got into a fight with him. And everybody I know has got into a fight with him, and they still love him.
Respected him for sure.
Right. Isn't that the point of all? Isn't that what America should be, A.B. Stoddard?
Well, just hearing his final statement today and reading his book, I learned that he was stopping treatment before he passed away on Saturday. And he speaks country with friends and such. And such celebration, and the fact that you describe is instinct, and everyone Berg's book Suicide of the Will about how tribalism is natural. It comes natural, and it's only sort of capitalism, the global marketplace that brought us together, stranger to stranger, with shared interests, and got us sickness, but. It is a thing that John McCain, he disagreed with Trump, and people, Trump supporters, could get mad because they're Trump and offended people because he was partisan enough to support a candidate reform because he believed in change, because he was Democrats. Let's put Joe Lieber on his presidential ticket.
I want to stop you one
already,
second. One more second here, A, because we're still breaking it up here. And hold on one second. I want to see if we can fix this one more time. But you're making the point. You're making a really interesting point, which is, this is dialer back, please, and see if we can get a better cell tower. The reality is that when McCain won the nomination in 2008, he wanted Joe Lieberman,
mm-hmm.
who was an independent, who had caucused with Democrats for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, the party came to him and said, no, don't appeal to the center left. Appeal to the hard right. And that's when they went with Sarah Palin.
So he flew up to Alaska, and the rest was history.
Yes. And that's...
He just met her, right? He didn't know her.
And that's, I think, the beginning of... Yeah, he didn't know her. He didn't know her particularly well on the campaign trail.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you see any of those, there was that book that was written... By the guys who were behind the circus, actually,
mm-hmm.
There was a Game Change, which was about all of that, and it was a very awkward moment in American politics, because what it did is it gave validity to talk show politics, and talk show politics. Yeah, they sound great. They're entertaining. They're, you know, mm-hmm. they're fun to listen to. People arguing about things they think would never, ever happen. But then in a world that got resorted by social media and, you know, thousands upon thousands of voices as opposed to a couple of voices who make a living doing this and therefore feel compelled to have to tell stories that aren't straight up made up.
Yeah. And, she has released a statement this afternoon, too, and it's some people are saying, well, she's sort of mincing words here because he had such an impact on her career, right? Turbocharged her career,
right?
Because she became a VP candidate. She gave an interview today and said, I respect John McCain's military service. I think it's unfortunate that he had people around him, and they continued to be around him for a long time who weren't serving him well. They certainly weren't serving the country well, and what they were trying to do. So she's basically saying, look, I respect the military service, but not the man she saw later because of blaming the people around him.
AB, your perspective on the whole Sarah Palin moment here, do you think that was the change moment for the Republican Party? And do they to this day regret it, or do they think this is really where the future is going to be?
Right. It's so interesting because I remember, she was so roundly rejected by George Will and David Brooks and all the sort of establishment Republican thinkers at the time because she was really the beginning. She was the first sort of face of grievance politics that now is so consuming the right. And they think it's such a winning issue. I mean, Trump literally sits around telling his aides, look, we've got to talk about the NFL more because this makes people wild. We have to play up murders at the hands of illegal immigrants and all this stuff. You know, this anger and this rage and this grievance politics and this resentment politics, Sarah Palin, you know, sort of started being the face of, and she was perky and sort of electric and exciting. And it was an interesting combination. And she was also a governor. And she had a really interesting story, very positive one, but she kind of fell apart during the campaign. And in terms of, you know, whether or not she was really fit to be vice president and all that. And I think what she did today is really unfortunate because I think she could honor the sacrifice of John McCain and the fact that he made her famous and move on. But she still wants to be, you know, she wants to be popular in like the Bannon world and the Breitbart world, which is out to get McCain and tarnish his legacy. But she was sort of this really interesting, almost success story. And then she was kind of happy just to lead this really angry, kind of outrage mob on the right, and that grew. We thought it would go away, but instead it really grew into a really driving force of what is now, you know, not the Republican Party, but the party of Trump.
Yeah, I think it should be pointed out, though, she was a governor. She's of Alaska, but Alaska has 700,000 people in it, mm-hmm. and 2 million bear. So it's not exactly the bear to human ratio is a little different.
A few less after Sarah Palin was loose.
My argument
about Sarah Palin is I would like to think there is a universe where her climb, her unlikely rise, had she followed a more sort of honorable path of really wanting to lead and govern instead of being a famous mouthpiece, she could have ended up being a really interesting story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to make a slight correction here because I think it's worth noting. Sarah Palin's first public statement about this, in which she said that he was surrounded by people who weren't loyal to him, mm-hmm. was yesterday morning. And, you know, within hours of learning of the death of John McCain. So, I mean, she came out guns blazing at the very beginning of this. So this is a moment that you hope. I guess we all keep hoping that, I think a lot of Americans keep hoping, we all, but a lot do, that this will be the moment where sanity comes back, where we get off this crazy train, where it's going to slow down, and you know, maybe he will meet his own promise to us that he'll be so presidential, you know, we'll get bored. I would love for that to happen. Right? Because the American economy is gangbusters. And now you saw just on the idea of a trade deal with Mexico, which is not, you know, it's far from done. He claims everything is done. But on a day where where North Korea thinks we're going to war with them again and Mexico thinks we're going to do a trade deal, the markets went through the roof. Right. So the president has an economic story to tell. He's got a business story to tell. He's got a tax story to tell. He's got things to be happy about. He keeps, as you point out, AB, he keeps getting in his own way and he keeps doing things that are ridiculous. And if he loses the veterans, if he loses older veteran Americans who, you know, understand sacrifice at a different level and would be especially the Vietnam era ones, who he's very popular with. He really, 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 really will lose a big, big part of his base, and I think that's what scared him today. AB, thank you for hanging in with us today. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, AB.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, thanks, AB Stoddard. All right, let's check in now with we're going to go straight to Ryan Burrow right now. I'm being told, hold on one second, the control room is telling me, Ryan Burrow's got the WGN news right now on WGN Everywhere. Procon Show with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 yes. WGN. Coming up, we are going to play an interview we did a few hours ago with Ken Burns, the legendary filmmaker, about his experience for the last number of decades with John McCain. When we were done with that interview in the 3 o'clock hour, there was not a dry eye in the house.
So emotional, so powerful, his words, and so thoughtful. I mean, he's been his friend, John McCain's friend, for years, but also obviously covered him as part of his documentary on the Vietnam War.
And he made the point, Mark McKinnon, that though he disagrees with him on most of the politics, most of the policy, he loved John McCain as a person, and most importantly, as an American patriot. And I believe, I hope, that most of us are exactly that, that we believe in the nation, we believe in the core values of the United States and the Constitution and all of that, and that's one thing that should unite us all. And yet we seem to be now further and further divided in that. And I have a point. Now, you worked on McCain's campaigns. Right, you have a story I'm going to beg you to retell too about his own humility concerning his injury, which I think was just one of those amazing things. But I looked back at I think this was his 2008 run where his slogan was "Country First." It wasn't "America First." It was "Country First." And there's a big difference between "America First" and "Country First," isn't there, Mark?
Yeah, you know, that's the thing that inspired so many of us, and I feel I'm so fortunate and lucky to have been in his orbit at all and spend some great time with him and cherished memories. But that was the mantra that he always told us, serve a cause greater than yourself. And that's such a powerful idea, you know, and I'm of course, I miss the man, but we're going to really miss his voice. But I love what I see happening. And by the way, I'd love to hear that Ken Burns interview. It should be fantastic, given his relationship with McCain and all the work that he's done. But for those of us who are in politics, and I think in journalism too, who have an interest in public policy, McCain was the ideal. He is the ideal. You know, he's a guy who rose above party and petty politics and made very tough decisions, but did it with humility. You know, he was the first to say that he screwed up or he was wrong or that he was human. You know, and he at times could be very vulnerable, but tough as, you know, the toughest guy you ever met, too, obviously, to survive the things that he did.
I think that's the scary part of the politics that we're living in now. And let me just, to the point, the scary part for me about Donald Trump is he does not apologize. He does not see himself as fallible, or at least will not let us see him as fallible. And that displays a lack of empathy and a sense of, well, even if I screw up, I'm still right. I'm more right than I am wrong. And you know, when you're the president of the United States, screwing up could cost lives, could cost, you know, dozens of lives or millions of lives. And so you have to be very, you know, I think that's one of the things we look for in an American president is a sense of humanity. And you're not really getting that from him. I mean, even though his core supporters think, oh, we don't need that. We've had that for years and years and years. We want a guy, you know, we want a tough guy who's always going to be right.
Well, I mean, this is a moment where I think you really look to a president in a moment like this. I mean, people do. They're looking for character and leadership and for somebody to rise above, you know, whatever petty, you know, arguments they may have had in the past. You know, this guy is a national hero. He's a patriot. He's a war hero. You know, put your own ego aside for once and your own insecurities. And he's just probably mad that McCain's getting so much attention, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it may be as simple as that. I don't think it's petty to say that. I think that's absolutely true.
But I mean, there's so many things unprecedented about this president. But you put your political anger and your political foes in the battles you've had with that person aside when it comes to their death, right? Isn't that a rule in politics?
Yeah.
And especially when you're dealing with someone who's a war hero, someone who has served their country, even if you disagree with them on every single thing, this is a moment when, as commander in chief, that you rise above that for the country. And you saw the American Legion hit back today and say, give him his due, respect him, he's a war hero. And then and only then did the White House go ahead and lower the flag again to half staff today, this afternoon.
Yeah, after a lot of resistance and pushback from all quarters, you know, this should have been a layup. There's nothing easier, right? Just write a nice response, lower the flags to this patriot.
Yeah.
And,
right.
You know, and yet even screwed that up.
Yeah. Yeah. And his response, what's been written for him, we're hearing, we just had A.B. Stoddard on, and she indicated that there may have been some threats of people to resign from the White House had he not been more respectful of that. She thinks we'll be hearing about that in the days to come.
Interesting. Well, good for them, because I thought about that in this, you know, because I know members of the press team and some others, I guess John Kelly, upon his death, came to him with a statement, you know, a few days ago, that he refused to acknowledge or use. But that would have been a point for me had I been in that White House. I would have said, thank you. I'm out the door.
You had a great personal anecdote, Mark, in I read a column you wrote about how you had a deal to help him run his campaign, but you also had kind of talked to then a rising star, Barack Obama, and the way everyone handled that seemed to be an example of what politics should be. Tell us about that.
Well, it was a very unusual situation because Senator McCain had asked me to work on his campaign for president, and I, of course, said, I'll mow your lawn in Sedona if you want. I'll do anything, Senator, because I revere him so much. But I said at the time, I said, I know this is unusual, Senator, but there's this guy, Barack Obama, who I've met, and I like him. I disagree with his politics. But if for some chance he wins the nomination and you win the nomination, I would step out of the general election because I wouldn't feel comfortable being the tip of the spear attacking him. And I don't think I would be the right guy to do that. And McCain kind of, you know, he said, let's, you know, I think he kind of thought it was, he was sort of dismissive about it because I think at that time he really didn't think Barack Obama was going to be the nominee. This was early in 2007. He thought it was kind of weird, but, you know, I'm kind of weird. So he said, okay, whatever. But then because of that, I thought that he might forget about it. And I also wanted the senior staff to know because I didn't want them to be surprised if it ever happened. And also to pin my own wings to the wall because I didn't want to chicken out later if it happened and just sort of forget about it because I felt it was important to honor that pledge. And then it happened. And then sure enough, McCain had forgotten about it. And so I had to, like, go get the memo and walk in and say, Senator, remember this? And he's like, McKinnon, you know, and kind of growled. But then gave me, you know, then had a big smile and hugged me and said, listen, man, you know, thank you for helping me get here. Couldn't have done it without you. And God bless you and good luck. And be very un-McCain-like not to keep your word.
Wow. How about that?
And it's such an interesting moment right then and there, because when you left, they went and they made the decision. There was the debate about who were they going to go with here. Mm-hmm. Was it going to be Joe Lieberman, who was an independent who caucused with Democrats as his vice presidential candidate, or which the party talked him out of? And then there were people in the party, and I remember sitting in a hotel in Minneapolis the night of Sarah Palin's speech at the convention in St. Paul, and these delegates coming back and all, and it was really divided in that bar. You know, all the best work gets done in those bars at those conventions, right? And it was really divided because you had some in the Illinois delegation, some downstate people like, oh, Sarah Palin's great, breath of fresh air. You know, I wish McCain weren't around. She should be the president of the United States. And then regular Republicans, you know, from upstate, you know, centrist Republicans, the Chuck Percy wing of the Republican Party, was like, oh man, what are we going to do with her? You know, and you saw that divide in August of 2018, and it never really, it never really lessened, right? I mean, it just became that moment. It became a very, the party got divided. And I just wonder, as a guy who ran campaigns and now runs a television show that looks at the wackiness of campaigns, The Circus, which you can see on Showtime, do you think we're ever going to be able to put Humpty Dumpty back together again?
Well, I'm a prisoner of hope. And, you know, one of the things that I love about what's going on is just how much acclamation and reverence is being shown for Senator McCain. And my hope is that there's, you know, this sort of celebration of his life is going to echo so loudly that there'll be others, you know, the next John McCain's out there that will see that's a way to live a life and that's the way to go out, you know, to live that kind of life, to have that kind of principles, to have that kind of courage, and hopefully, you know, just a giant symbol of the way we should lead our lives and run our politics.
I'm going to ask you right before we let you go, because this is, to me, I mean, coming up, we're going to do the Ken Burns interview. We're going to replay that for everybody. But you, similarly, I mean, Ken was crying in the interview. We all started crying in the interview.
We did.
And I could cry now thinking about crying in the interview, which I'll cry again in a few minutes. But you brought a tear to my eye a couple of months ago when we were talking about John McCain, and you told the story about the latter days of being on, I think it was the 2000 campaign, right, where you were with him and things weren't going well, but he still had to make a stop. And there was a moment with a hairbrush, which I think is, to me, one of those, such an emblematic thing about the humility of John McCain.
Yeah, it was actually in the 2008 campaign, and it's hard for me to even think about this moment without tearing up, because it was so powerful. So I'd gone, the campaign had collapsed, and so those of us, there were just a handful of us still there who all just stayed on as volunteers. And so when you went out with McCain, you did, since there were only a few of us, we did like all the jobs. You know, I was doing the press, I was doing the travel guys, the scheduler, whatever it was. And when I got to where McCain was, and I was like, I was stepping in, and the person who was with McCain, the assistant who had been with him, was leaving and gave me this black bag. And I looked in the bag after they left, and there was like a brush and a couple other things. And I didn't really get what I was supposed to do with that. And then I was in the van with McCain, and we went to this rally. And we got to the rally. The van kind of pulled up in front of the rally. And we got out of the other side of the van so nobody could see us from the crowd. And then we got out of the van. Senator McCain comes over to me and bends over to his waist in supplication and total humility. And I realized then what the brush was for, because he couldn't brush his own hair. He couldn't raise his arms above his shoulders because they'd been broken so many times as a prisoner of war. So I, you know, I brush his hair, and he turns and goes into the crowd, and I turn around and just start weeping.
Oh, God.
Oh, man.
Oh, God. Man. I mean, that's... When you stop and you think about one individual service to the United States of America and his desire to be buried at West Point, or at the Naval Academy in Annapolis, Maryland, and to be, you know, for his, you know, to be, you know, a sailor first, you know, that of everything, and a naval aviator, you know, the things that, that were so important to him. And we, and so many people pound their chests about patriotism and the military and their desire. But the military is a complicated thing. It's a complicated relationship with humanity to be in the United States military service, right? Because it's you're defending the United States, you're defending the honor of the country, you're defending the Constitution. But you know, bad things happen and mistakes are made. And this is really a moment where, you know, you see the real humanity that it takes to be a real public servant in the United States is seen there, and he is what people should aspire to be in public service, no matter what your politics are. If you're a stark raving liberal or a stark mad Republican or whatever you happen to be, you know, try to live a life of consistency and dedication to the central principles of the United States, and that's what John McCain is for. And that's why all day long we're talking about him, because this may be our last chance to do that where anybody's right. listening.
Yeah, exactly right. Well, I appreciate you having me on for a chance to talk about him, because, like I said, I just feel incredibly fortunate to spend any time with him, because he was such a giant, such an example of how to lead a life.
Thank you for doing it, man. We appreciate it. The circus is coming back in a couple of weeks on Showtime. I just cannot imagine. I know you're going to go back to work, and it's going to be hellish now for the next couple of months. But your service, your sacrifice is my entertainment on a Sunday night. So thank you for doing that.
We love the show, Mark.
Thanks, man.
You, guys. I'll be back in the human microwave shortly.
Yes, thank you, sir. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Mark McKinnon.
You didn't say kick it hard.
That's okay.
Not the right
today.
Day for that.
Not the right day. He's the guy in the cowboy hat that you see, you know, on the circus. You see him on a lot of TV now doing the interviews, and he is a...
Awful stuff.
Really, really, you know, again, a dedicated American. I think all of us who see ourselves as that, all of us who want to go and tell the truth and want to, you know, hold power to account, but be respectful of the fact that these people, it's tough. These people run for office. They often spend their own money, as Donald Trump did. They wish to do it for, most of them wish to do it for the right reason. Some don't. Mm-hmm. I'm still, Donald Trump is still a bit of an open question for me about that. I'm not sure that he wanted this. I'm not sure what his motive was. So let's just assume for a second that it was all the right reasons. He didn't think that businesses were being treated properly by the government, and he didn't think that he wanted, you know, to help people in these little towns that, you know, were single industry towns, and single industries have left and they've gone to all these other countries. And he wanted to finally go back and recreate for them some hope and recreate for them some business or some, you know, some way to live out the rest of their lives in those towns. And you know, maybe that was, and that's, those are all honorable things. I don't necessarily agree with them because I think the world moves in a different way, but at least that's an honorable thing. If that's what that's what you want to do, and you want to remember the great service and sacrifice of the military, all of those things would be on their face. And I think those are the things that his supporters hold on to and say, well, that's what he's really trying to do. That's what he's trying to talk to me. He's trying to help me. And because the world is passing me by, and people are being disrespectful of my contributions and what my family's contributions were and what my town was all about and what my service to the military was all about. But that level of disrespect is in that they're perceiving is in part made up by those who wish to pound into their head that they're being disrespected. On a day-to-day basis, they may not be. And economies move and things change. And you know, coal is a great example of this. Coal is not in fashion anymore for a number of reasons. And you know, the politics of it have become about about, you know, trying to tell people in these towns, listen, you need us back. And they don't necessarily, that may not be a long-term solution.
No.
But,
you know, you want, I think the disrespect that he showed John McCain the days after his death, not able to put his political sparring aside in order to honor American hero. I think he lost a lot of people on this. I mean, here's a president who speaks up against kneeling NFL players at games, are disrespecting the flag and disrespecting veterans, and then you have to hear from the American Legion before you decide to lower the flag again to say he deserves better than this, Mr. President.
Right.
You can't have it both ways.
Right. Right. That's an excellent point. And I just hope that there are more people who will get to the president's ear to be more respectful of the office that he inhabits. Because it's really about that. That's that.
These moments are about that. No
right.
question.
Because the politics I just described, I mean, that's an honorable thing. Whether you agree with it or disagree with it, if you try to prosecute those politics in an honorable way, mm-hmm. then it's okay. That's America. But if you try to do it by continuing to divide and calling people names and calling countries names and making up and doing things that are really below the dignity and the integrity of the office of President of the United States, because he's representing the United States writ large, he's representing all of us when he's doing it. And John McCain is a man who deserved that, and he has done it. He got dragged into doing it, kicking and screaming.
Mm-hmm.
He still has not uttered a word out of his mouth. It'll be interesting to see if he does, because he will be asked if he gets in front of microphones in the next week and says something out loud. The next question will be about that. And he's going to have, it doesn't matter what will happen with Manafort or with Comey or with, you know, Mueller or any of that stuff or Don Jr. I mean, God knows what's going to happen this week. I get a sense because there's only 4 days left now
mm-hmm.
for Mueller to do anything before they take they go into their quiet period, their sterile period, where they're still working, but they're not actually making any public move here.
Right, in deference to the midterm elections.
Right. So the those things could happen. People will ask that because that's really, really, really critically important. Because John McCain, was self-described SOB. He did that. He would say to his own political enemies, "I'm an SOB." Oh, I'm sorry, I said that, but I had to say it. Right? I mean, he was a tough, tough, tough guy, but he was a tough, tough, tough American patriot.
Mm-hmm.
And I just would, who showed all of the great, America is not a boastful country. It's not a, we're going to beat you. That's not how we won the hearts and minds of the world in the 20th century, by being jerks. We did it by literally saving people and liberating those camps in Europe and rebuilding Japan after the war mm-hmm. and doing the kinds of things around the world, giving aid to Africa and giving aid to Southeast Asia, and by taking trade deficits because we wanted to grow economies in other places that would be helpful to us in the long run and helpful to the world in the long run. And, you know, this is, now it's all politics. Now it's either us versus them. And it should not... It can be done in a better way.
It can.
All right. Ken Burns will share his story with us coming up after Mr. Burrow tells us what's happening in the WGN newsroom.
As far as I know, you are the only Republican who thought it was a good thing to make this report public.
Well, frankly, I also had some mixed emotions about it. But the reason why I think came down and said that we should is because that's what America is all about. We do things wrong. We make mistakes. We review those and we vow never to do them again. But what we need to do is come clean. We move forward and we vow never to do it again. That's what we did after Abu Grave, and that's what we've done after other times in our history. We're not a perfect nation, but we are a nation that acknowledges our mistakes and we move forward, and we are not going to be inhumane.
Remembering Senator John McCain today, just a few days short of his birthday, actually. He would have been 82, I believe, on Wednesday. And I cannot imagine a more perfect voice to discuss this with than Ken Burns, the great historical documentarian and friend of the show. Thank you, Ken, for being with us, as always. And you and I have talked about, and when we were promoting, when you were promoting the Vietnam series, we talked about John McCain's presence in that. he really has been such an important moral voice for America since he returned from that war.
He has indeed, and I think the clip that you picked is absolutely perfect reflection of him. I had the great honor, Ro, of knowing him for 25 years. I testified before a subcommittee in the mid-90s, early to mid-90s, and we became friends and knew him through it. And the first person we went to see when we were thinking about even trying to tackle something as big and as controversial or fraught with, you know, pitfalls as Vietnam was John McCain, and said, look, I'm not going to interview you. You're still in the public sphere. You're going to be in the film archivally, but I just need your help. I need you to set some pics. And you flash ahead 10 and a half years to our premiere just a little bit after we spoke last, row at the Kennedy Center, and he had seen the whole thing, and he loved it and was filled with the possibility of what a film that was accurately depicting it might do. And he said, I think this is going to save lives, meaning help redeem people who felt that their actions were irredeemable, and to help assuage those who had guilty consciences or were still, you know, beset by the demons that war produces in the hearts of all those who participate in it. But more importantly, he talked a lot about the thing that was in your clip, about how flawed a human being he was, how flawed we were, and how incredibly critical it was, particularly to our democratic experiment, to be willing to be self-examining, to say, you know, I screwed up here. You know, it's sort of like the Friday nighters, Saturday afternoon coach. He said, we stunk here, or we did this. He was always willing to have that self-evaluation. And now we live in an age where people never make mistakes. You support someone blindly without any kind of thought. And John McCain's death this week, I think, offers us the opportunity as we talk and think about who he was and the legacy that he left, but also who we are and who we want to be, what kind of people we want to be. And I think just as Jimmy Stewart makes the decision that he wishes to live in Bedford Falls and not Potterville, so too John McCain insisted that we not live in a Potterville of someone who is sort of checking off every deadly sin sort of gleefully, but rather a place in which we're self-reflective and realize that no one party has the answer, that no one person has the answer, that we are best when we transcend party, as he did so many times in his life, and was serving, as he says, I just wanted to be said that I served something higher than myself. And did I make mistakes? Yes, but did I love the United States of America? And I wanted to be a wholehearted, resounding yes. And what we are doing this week is we are cheering our brother home, who did do that, who did an extraordinary job, and reminds us, particularly in tough times when we're really feeling the kind of fragility of our experience, that we have these pole stars that, regardless of whether they're with us in flesh or not, can lead us on. I've always, as you know, been attached to the enduring legacy of Abraham Lincoln. Now we have, in our firmament, we add another sinner, but an imperfect soul, but somebody who I think in these tough times permits us to, regardless of your party, look ahead to what's best for us and rather what's good for me.
You saw that reflected in his final statement, and I've seen parents saying they want their kids to read this and reread it, because it's an important message, how he spoke of how we're weakening our greatness as a nation with these rivalries, these tribal rivalries that have sown resentment, hatred, and violence. Who better a man to deliver that message and make us think about it a little bit than a man who knows all too well how the Vietnam War divided America?
That's right. And he had that experience of being through what the divisive aspects of the Vietnam was. And he partnered with John Kerry, someone on the opposite side of the political spectrum, someone who protested his own involvement in the world. And today, you know, later they worked together to make Vietnam to recognize Vietnam. And they are now, despite still being a communist regime, an important economic and strategic partner. But the larger message is exactly what we see. said. We have an opportunity now to rededicate ourselves by having parents, by having schools. Let's read John McCain now. Let's hear this plea. It's a very simple idea, and one that has come down through the generations of the American experience, and that is essentially that we are an alloy is stronger than its constituent metals. We are a nation of immigrants. We are made richer, and I don't need to tell anybody within the earshot of the city of Chicago what it means to have an interbraided, interwoven, strong ally because of all the different constituent parts, that we are not about party or individual. We are about what's good for the country, and sometimes this person or that party might have the right answer for just that moment, and sometimes we're not. And when we get fixed into a rut, as we are right now and have been in the past, where it's all ideological, it's all nationalistic, it's all anti-immigrant, it's all blood and soil, the worst kind of instincts of human nature, tribal rather than civilized, where you don't want to have a civil discourse because that would expose you as a fraud, where you take down, you raise back up to full staff the flag that should be down for a week, if not a month, to honor this extraordinary American person who could have gone home from that prison earlier and didn't, refused to do that, who was interviewed by a French journalist after he had several bones set without so much as an aspirin to ease the pain, and then was beaten by his captives for being insufficiently grateful to them in that interview, in which he professed his love for his country and for his wife and for the sense of us. You know, I work in a tiny little place. Ro knows this better than maybe just about anybody on earth. I work in a place where there's that tiny two-letter plural pronoun, us. Feels good to say us or we. And then you raise those to capital letters and it says U.S. My entire professional life has been in a kind of bouncing back between those tiny, not capitalized U.S. and the big capitalized U.S. And John McCain puts himself firmly in that, supporting with his life the United States of America, the greatest experimentation that has ever taken place in humankind. Still fragile, but also with the sense that the only way in which we succeed at this experiment is by participating and belonging to this very simple thing that we love to say, us.
You know, I've been thinking about this a lot. You talk about the fact that this is a moment for Americans to stop and reflect,
mm-hmm.
and stop the spinning for a moment. And it is.
Yeah.
And,
amen.
And, you know, when he... when he announced that he was sick a year ago, and as these months drew on and we were starting to hear that he was probably going to pass imminently, and then Friday the announcement that he had stopped treatment kind of gave us a sense that you know, this was going to be announced fairly quickly. And I've been thinking for weeks now about this notion of, you know, America first, America first, America first. And I think that regardless of when we come out of this political moment, if it's in November or, you know, some place further, we have to think of ourselves as Americans first, not as
right.
America
yeah.
first. And John McCain exactly. was that guy who did exactly
that. Guy. So here's the key to him. I'm working on a biography of Ernest Hemingway, very complicated, flawed, deeply flawed human being, but arguably one of the great writers of the 20th century. When John McCain was a little boy, 13, 14, 15, he found a four-leaf clover and ran into his father's library and randomly pulled down a volume in which to press the four-leaf clover, this lucky thing. And he pulled down For Whom the Bell Tolls, and he started to read it. It's about an American professor named Robert Jordan, a kind of complicated but flawed but decent man who goes off to fight in support of the loyalists in Spain as the fascists were trying to overthrow the Republican small R government there. And it's a ragtag band of American liberals and communists and socialists and Trotskyites and Stalin supporting, and it's a deeply flawed cause, as Robert Jordan comes to understand. And if you want to know John McCain, he sort of spent his life trying to live up to this sort of epic novel character, Robert Jordan, who is makes mistakes, but serves always something higher than himself. However, even that that cause might be imperfect. And what I think is happening right now in the United States, as we watch the petty ordinariness of some in response to his death and the magnificence of his life, that his service to the country will obviously continue way beyond his death, that we will be able to recall not just the obvious sacrifice with regard to spending 5.5 years in a horrific prisoner of war camp in North Vietnam, but what he's done in support of bipartisanship and the real understanding of patriotism in the intervening years. And now in death, I think he'll be a reminder to us of our better selves, our better angels, Lincoln said. And that's, I think he's going to perform his best service to this republic in that regard. And that makes me incredibly happy. And you're right, Ro. Maybe it'll be November, maybe it'll be after that. But we will emerge, and we will be better, and we will be stronger, and maybe it is lawful that we pass through this kind of terrifying crucible in order to come out on the other side more completely committed to serving those principles that John McCain embodied all his life. Did I agree with him politically? Not most of the time. Did I think he was one of the finest human beings I've ever met? Yes. And the last time I saw him, he came up to me, and he knew what was going on, and I'd interviewed him also for a film we just completed on the Mayo Clinic, which will be out in September. And he's looking straight in my eye and says, you know, they've taken care of me, but I know what's happening. I know what's down the road. And he had a twinkle in his eye, and that twinkle was his peace that he had made with his impending death. And as that interview broke up and the cameramen were putting away the stuff and we were striking the stuff in his office, he came over and he said, I love you, Ken. And I said, I love you too, Senator. And, you know, I just spent the last 2 days kind of walking around. I'm in the Rocky Mountains, this beautiful, majestic place that reminds you that there is something much bigger than yourself. And just been thinking about this man that I had the privilege to know. He and I tried to get a posthumous pardon for Jack Johnson from W and from Obama, and didn't work out. And then all of a sudden, he gets pardoned for all the wrong reasons. And we sort of looked at each other and shrugged our shoulders and said, well, at least it's done. It's been a very, very complex and very interesting relationship. But for a man of that stature to just be that kind of direct feeling, you know, we aren't given much time on this earth. And if we don't look at the people that we admire or love or have feelings for and tell them what we feel, we miss real opportunities. And everybody who's a parent listening to me knows exactly what this is about. You know, we experience the great joy of unconditional love. And that's what we need to bring into our public discourse, into our public lives. These people are no different than us. The other is not the other, and it's only the demagogues and the bullies and the dictators that will try to make enemies of everybody. And my God, if you could possibly think that there was something wrong with him being captured and then behaving and acquitting himself the way he did, then, boy, we've got some splaining to do.
We'll leave it there. Ken Burns, I should make the point that they have just now lowered the flag back to half staff at the White House. And there's another statement that has come out by the president as well, saying that he ordered that and some other things. It appears that there was some political pressure on him to make that that decision. So,
I wonder. To do a decent human thing.
Right,
you know?
Right. I think that's kind of what we get to. But thank you so much for your service to this country. You know, we say that to say, I mean, how many times have you and I said that to other people that we've interviewed or met who, you know, go do the fighting and dying for the United States? But you know, I think that your work stands alone as still a sentinel, still a beacon for Americans to look at and think about the arc of history here, and think about Lincoln, and think about World War II, and think about Vietnam, and think about, you know, whatever that moment. Jack Johnson is an excellent example. That documentary was spectacular.
Yep. Civil War.
To talk about where we are in, you know, this is not a straight line, but it's a line nonetheless. And I think
yes, well, you're very kind. You know, I'll leave you with one thing, Ro, if I could. The novelist Richard Powers, in his most recent novel, said that the best arguments in the world won't change a single mind. The only thing that can do that is a good story. We are obligated, whether we're documentary filmmakers or radio personalities or parents with children we're tucking into bed, to tell good stories. And I think the story that we now have the opportunity to tell about John McCain is a really good one, and it's a healing one, and it has durability. It lasts. It isn't fragile the way the bully and the tin horn dictator are. It's real and has depth and reminds us of our best selves.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ken. Thank you, my brother.
Thanks, Ken.
Take it easy, bud. Thank you.
Bye.
Does it for another day of broadcast insolence.
What a day. Great tributes to John McCain. Some amazing, incredible people to weigh in on this program today. I just enjoyed their stories. Ken Burns, extremely powerful words about John McCain.
It's available, by the way, at WGNRadio.com, too, if you want to send that to people who are Ken Burns fans or John McCain. His perspective on this, totally different than, I think, most of the other voices that you're hearing here.
Yeah.
Because he's looking at it through the entire arc of history, as Ken Burns does.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a worthwhile moment. And as we pointed out, I mean, here, the story of John McCain is one that is unlike any other American story of our lifetimes in a lot of respects. I mean, there are a lot of politicians who have done great things. There are a lot of military people who have done great things. There is no one else I can think of who served more consistently and honorably, regardless of your politics. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of people on the, you know, on the left that look at John McCain, he's just a Republican, so he must be bad. He must be, you know, but if he's what gives me hope for America, because if we can produce more of the attitude that John McCain had, that it's about country first, not America first, not the brand first, but the idea of us as a country first. It's, you know, getting along first.
And serving something greater than yourselves, which he was an example of that.
Right.
And we heard from Mark McKinnon, his former campaign manager, who said just for a brief moment in time, he was able to do that by serving the campaign of John McCain and learned so much from him.
What's interesting, you know, Mark pointed out in the interview that we had with Mark a little bit earlier on, which will also be at WGNRadio.com, that he left the campaign after the primary because he didn't want to run against Barack Obama because he personally liked Barack Obama and didn't want to do the negative ads. But he rejoined the McCain campaign late after it was already clear that they weren't going to win, and they stopped their negative ads because those weren't working.
Right.
To whatever degree they were using. There weren't many, but to the degree they were using them. And that's when you really got the sense of the measure of the man there. So that's that is an incredible. Just the life and times. We're making movies about a lot of things. He is an American superhero.
Sometimes a hard pill to swallow. It sometimes causes us difficulties at home and abroad. It is sometimes used by our enemies in attempts to hurt us. But the American people are entitled to it nonetheless. I call on all Americans to not despair of our present difficulties, but to believe always in the promise and greatness of America, because nothing is inevitable here. Americans never quit. We never surrender. We never hide from history. We make history. We have nothing to fear from each other. We are arguing over the means to better secure our freedom and support the general welfare. But it should remain an argument among friends who share an unshaken belief that in our great cause and in the goodness of each other, we are Americans first, Americans last, and Americans always.
Every-
Every life has to end one way or another. I'm very happy. I'm very happy with my life. I'm very happy with what I've been able to do. And there's two ways of looking at these things, and one of them is to celebrate. You've been around a long time, old man. You've had a great life. You've had a great experience. I want when I leave, that the ceremony is at the Naval Academy, and we just have a couple of people that stand up and say, this guy, he served his country.
Good night, ladies.
Good night, sir.
Hit it, sweetheart.